4, 3, 2, 1. Style Bender, ladies and gentlemen. Man. Salute, sir. Congratulations, salute. Man. Mm.
Thank you.
Dude, your fight Friday night was, that was what you would call like a coming out party.
Yeah, in America.
Yeah, people got to see.
First fight in Vegas, first main event, first top 10 guy. And I feel like I got to kind of like shut a lot of people up because before that fight, a lot of people were kind of like, shit, it's too much, it's too soon. Like
the hype.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, he's this and that. And for me, I wouldn't take insult to it because they don't know. You know, you can't fault them for it. So,
well, yeah. You did a smart thing in the way you handled your transition to MMA too. I mean, you really took your time and did it right.
100%. When
did you and I talked for the first time about this? How many years ago?
2015, I think. Mm. Yeah, you hit me up on Instagram and said, you know, when am I going to call one of your fights?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, we'll take our time because my coach, he's the mastermind behind all this, Eugene Behrman. Without him, my career would be in the shitter. So he kind of let just. Take our time. There's no rush.
Smart way to do it.
100%. Because you see, like, looking for a fight. Mm-hmm. Guys, like, example, Sage Northcutt. He's been up and down in the UFC fighting, you know, like, his rise and stuff like that. But you can't just come in here with, like, maybe 3 fights, unless maybe, like, a Mickey Gall, who also has extensive background in something else, mm-hmm. like jiu-jitsu.
Right. You know?
But, yeah, I took my time, fought around the world, fought different body types, different styles. And then eventually, I think the UFC were like, okay, what do you want? Come on. Like, let's go.
And then, well, you built up a lot of hype outside. You built mm-hmm. up some hype kickboxing. You built up some hype in MMA, but you built up a lot of internet hype.
Yeah.
There was a lot of highlight videos made of you, and people were like, oh, shit, look at this guy. And then dudes were breaking down your videos, like breaking down technique. Like, look how he sets this up. Mm-hmm. There was one that, was it Brendan Dorman? Who did it recently? Was it Lawrence Kenshin? No, maybe it was Brendan Dorman.
I saw striking one yesterday. Yeah, Brendan Dorman.
He did one where you set that dude up and then left high kicked him.
No, that was a Lawrence Kenshin. Yeah.
Dude, those guys are so important.
You know, fun fact about that kick, we're drilling it. Eugene taught it to me, that setup, probably 7 days before. And he said, if this lands, it's a finisher. He said that.
Like, wow. All right,
whatever. And then in the fight, something happened, and I didn't even think about it, just... boom, and it landed, and I hurt my foot on his head, actually. I actually hurt my foot, because that was the third fight of the night, so it was a tournament, so the final fight, and I hurt my foot on his head, and I was like, okay. Because you kind of see me limp a little bit, then I went in on him and just, finished it off.
That was a beautiful high kick, man. Yeah. The way you set it up was so interesting, too, because you forced him into this weird battle of erratic movement. Like, you did a lot of this with him.
You got to take care of this first. A lot of guys think, like, with Farah Sahabi, what he said, take care of this, scramble your brain.
Dude, Farah Sahabi's a treasure.
100%.
He's a treasure.
I like the way he thinks. And I listened to that podcast, and, when he said that, I was like, that's what we do. I like to make these guys second-guess themselves, like, just get stuck, like, okay, he's right here. Like, fuck, I got to reset right here. Okay, cool. Oh, just got jabbed. And then they just get flustered. And they can talk all this stuff, like, oh, we're going to do this and this and that. Right? And it's different when you see it on TV, but when you're in... Because I've had it done to me. I've got teammates that do it to me all the time. If I'm not on my game, they do it to me. I'm like, so this is what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to be on the other side of that. So
if you come in overtrained or just sick
not
or
having
lazy.
My day. Like, Dan Hooker will catch me on some days.
Dan Hooker's a beast, man.
Well, that's my guy, bro.
Ooh, he's a serious dude.
So it's been like, I don't know, 3 weeks. Shane Young in Singapore. Myself Friday night and Dan Hooker on Saturday.
Dan Hooker's one of them never celebrate in the octagon guys either. He's all angry even after
I call him
wins.
Vegeta. I call him Vegeta. Remember in was it 219? He looked at you, he told me it didn't mean to, but he looked at you, he's like, do you know who I am now? And threw his mouth guard at the cage, but he said it went through the cage and hit you in the chest or something.
Is
accident.
That what he said to me?
Yeah,
do you know who I am now? I knew who he was.
Of course you did, but like it's cause like the UFC wasn't really like, you know, putting him out there. They kind of like just sleeping on him, so he felt frustrated.
Yeah, like I get it.
Yeah,
that's just because he's so ambitious.
Yeah, 100%.
But I don't have nothing to do with that.
Yeah, of course I know.
Yeah,
third party. But
all
me
I
and
do
him
is
go
sit down and call fights.
Me and him go at it. Me, Carlos. Me, John Vaque. BJ Bland. Like so many. Like people don't know yet. I've told them like when K1 was the pinnacle of combat sports, right? New Zealand, Australasia was on top. You had Ray Sefo, Mark Hunt, Doug Viney, Jason Vimore, Jordan Tai. Guys from that side of the world running it. And other side of the world as well. But I felt like we fell off. And then New Zealand combat sports kind of took a lull for a few years, a long time. And now we're doing it again. Like guys like me, Dan, Shane, Kai, we're about to like take it to the next level and then bring NZ Sports again all the way up.
Well, you know what's interesting is that New Zealand in particular, like you guys, there's something about having you guys come over here, and there's not like a long history where people think of, mm-hmm. you know, like New Zealand MMA fighters, but New Zealand kickboxers. Mm. I mean, it's one of the most rich environments. Like, think about all the different high-level kickboxers that came out of New Zealand, or yeah. Australia for that matter.
Australasia in general.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. Crazy 100%. Number of like really high-level kickboxers.
Like when I came to help Rumble, with his camp for John Jones, because Rashad linked it up and said, you should come help us out. And I said, yeah, sure. So I went to Black Zillions when it was still around. And I was surprised. I was like, man, the stand-up in America is not even close on our level. The grappling, the wrestling, because you guys have it in schools and other mm-hmm. Brazilians come here and open schools and stuff like that. But the stand-up was not on our level. So I told Eugene that, and he's like, good. I wanted you to know that, because Doug had the same thing when he went to Vegas. And then he saw, like, man, these guys, their stand-up's not really on our level. So we've always had that. I don't know where it comes from. There's, like, a whole lineage of it. Even Ray Sefer, we come from the same school.
Sure.
Yeah, BLG school. But, yeah, grappling and stuff, I feel like we were behind at first because of, you know, internet. We get seminars and shit like that. And I've got obsessive trainers like Adam Johnson. He's my jiu-jitsu coach in a way. And he's just obsessed. So they're constantly, like, upgrading everything. And I think it went from, I didn't really get to use my jiu-jitsu much, a little bit in that fight, but the takedown defense, that's all Andre as well, my wrestling coach. He's a Romanian guy. So we don't need to, like, go anywhere else. I feel like we've got people where we are, and we're stacked enough to be able to level up and compete with the rest of the world.
Well, you know? If you've got someone like Dan Hooker in your camp, mm. just that alone, when you have guys like you and him together, that's yeah. what forces everybody to the next level. And everybody around you will rise up too. They'll see what you're doing. They'll see your fight with Tavares. They'll see mm. some of your fights online. They'll see you in the gym.
Yeah.
And you, when you have a guy like that in the gym, I've always experienced this yeah. in jiu-jitsu and everything else, everybody else's level rises up to try to catch up to that guy.
100%. Because it's just, all they see, like you guys, or what the world sees is just us on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then they see like the highlights, the cool stuff. But my teammates get to see me fuck up all the time. They see me get my licks.
Of course.
So when yeah. they see all that stuff, then they see me on the world stage kicking ass. And like, man, of course, I can do this. Like Brad Riddell, badass kickboxer, world champion. One of my teammates, old Angry Panda. But he's moving, making his move to MMA now, right now. But he's another one of those guys that he... And kickboxing doesn't really do it for him. He's like built like a Chad Mendes type guy, short, stocky, but pretty thick. And he can wrestle, you know, but no one knows it yet. So whenever he comes into MMA or the UFC, then everyone's going to be like, okay, take him down. Let's see what can happen. But, yeah, they find out eventually.
Yeah, there's guys from that section of the world. I mean, you really stop and think about between New Zealand and Australia.
Mm.
How many world-class kickboxers? Holy shit.
A lot. Yeah, and they've run through, not just from this era, but even back in the day.
Right, Dennis Alexio, right? Yeah. Wasn't? Yeah, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
See, for me with kickboxing, I know.
Or is he from Hawaii?
I know. Like, say, up to Ray Sefo's days, like Mark Hunt, but I never really invested in K-1 back in the day.
I'm thinking of Stan Longinatus. I think Stan Longinatus was from Australia.
But I know, like, there's a deep, rooted history and kickboxing in Australia yeah. and all that kind of stuff.
Why? What happened there? How'd that get started?
No idea. That's the thing. I could sit there. If you want to speak to someone, Eugene would be the guy, or Tojo. They're the guys that have the history just up here. But for me, I just came in and I enjoyed it, and I jumped in the pool.
Well, from the United States, there are some big kickboxing camps, but also you get a lot of guys who've come here from Holland and from yeah. other kickboxing-rich places and
like
try to
Harry
enter.
Hooft, he's another
sure,
guy right now.
Sure. And, of course, guys who fought over there and came over here, like Alistair and yeah. guys who entered into MMA. It's just, it is interesting that, you know, for MMA gyms, there's like a certain level of striking. And then you see like a Nicky Holtzkin will come and yeah. start training with those guys. And you realize like,
he was
oh,
there
Jesus.
When I was there. I was watching a little bit of his sparring. He's good. What's happening to him now? I haven't seen him in a while.
I think he's boxing now.
Real?
Yeah, I think
like Tyrone.
Yeah, I think he's decided that there's more money in boxing.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's winning.
He's got good hands as well.
He does. He's got a nasty left hook.
Yeah,
you know?
That body rip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like his style. But I think kickboxing, like, if I wanted to take the boxing blueprint, I could have done that because I'm 6-1 in boxing as well. So I could have done that and just got built up, fight like, you know, the cans, fight some champions, local champions, some national champions, and eventually on the world stage. But for me, I never wanted to feel vulnerable. I never wanted to feel like another guy could kick my ass in another, just like, you know, Floyd Mayweather, you're about to do this fight with McGregor part two. And they had all these stupid rules, like, okay, no.
I think that was all fake.
Yeah, I know. But, like, even if the idea of it, I'm like, if right. you're going to do it, just jump in.
Right.
What do we do? It's like, okay, you're a man. Like, yo, fuck you. We're going to do it man to man. But right. no kicks, though. No knees, no elbows. And I had that, like, it's just, I don't understand. I'm like, why? If you want to prove you're the best fighter, you have to fight people from other codes.
Right.
And this is at the UFC, that's the highest level. You know, so
have you entered into any wrestling competition or jiu-jitsu
grappling competition? Yeah. I normally place. I never
submission
been
grappling
first.
Or?
Yeah, submission. Yeah. I've never been first, but I'm like either second, third, or somewhere else. But yeah, I've only ever done maybe four or five in my career.
You have a specialty though, and I've always felt like guys who have a specialty, if they can get to a certain amount of good at this other thing without abandoning their skills as a specialty, 100%. They're always going to have that giant advantage.
I agree. You know? Same thing. Whatever got them to what they're good at, and they say boxing, wrestling, they can do the same thing.
Sure.
Like Gary Tonin, what was the fight? He had a one FC or one championship, and he knocked the guy with the 1-2.
Yeah,
that wasn't a jiu-jitsu style punch. That wasn't like an amateur, like a guy who's never strike before. He actually looked like he was flowing well with a stand up, and that's because same thing happens in jiu-jitsu or what, you know, this whatever made him great at grappling can make him great at stand up as well.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. I mean, it's there's obviously there's the added element of getting hit that some people can't psychologically handle as well.
Yeah, we know
those. It makes a big difference.
I used to be, but then even I watch my fight after it happened. I keep looking at what's happening. I'm searching for people. I'm searching for shots or whatever. But a lot of people kind of like either flare, close up, or they not turn away, but like they just try and use the wall. And you can't really use that in MMA because the gloves, they don't help. But in kickboxing, you can just like...
Right.
Like you were there in LA when I fought for the Glory World title.
Yes.
That kind of style, like you can just juggernaut, walk down and beat the legs or whatever.
With those big pads.
Exactly,
big,
the big gloves.
Up, big gloves.
You can still find your ways around them. And they made this, the ring was probably if you put three of these tables together, that was the ring. It was
Jesus.
A smaller.
They're well, trying
I cracked
to rope you in?
I cracked the code. I was able to get my footwork around them. Even this cage was big enough, and people were like, was the cage smaller? I was like, yeah, but it was big enough for me.
The thing about that Palms cage that I really like is I feel like it's the right size.
I like the setup.
I feel like the regular UFC cage is big, and I like that it's big, but it might be too big.
Yeah.
Might
that cage wasn't too
to
big for me.
Big.
It was small, but it wasn't like, oh my God, like in a phone booth or anything.
No, I mean, it looked like you had a lot better than a kickboxing ring.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, think about that. Yeah, it's very rare you get a boxing ring that has anywhere near the kind of distance from corner to corner.
Yeah.
But the UFC, there's some pros and cons, I think. But it's a con when it's a fight like Ngannou versus Derek Lewis. That's when it's a con.
I have a video of me before that fight that I was yelling, somebody's gonna die.
I know. Everybody thought that. Then, dude, coming
like
into that
neck
fight,
minute.
When I saw Francis weigh 253, I was like, oh, shit, he's
Boy,
in
he normally,
shape.
Yeah.
He's normally,
he looked jacked. He looked jacked. Yeah.
He looked like he took it very fucking serious. I thought he was going to realize that he got out-wrestled and out-conditioned. He's going to come back guns blazing and try to put a beating on Derek Lewis. But he was so tentative.
Like, even with a fight like Steven Wonderboy Thompson and Darren Till, that fight, people were like, it was boring. I was like, hell no. Like, I enjoyed that fight.
Right.
It was just small margin for error. Two stand-up guys who, you know, you can understand the game where it's like the foot placement, you know, feints, all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And then people were like, you know, that sucked. I was like, well, you don't understand, you know, striking on that level. But that Derek Lewis fight and Francis, it was like, I tried and just can't, it was just, yeah.
It was weird. It was the number two least amount of strikes landed ever in a 3-round fight.
Damn.
Yeah.
And they're both beasts. They're both, you know, like motherfuckers. But
I know. They've both been in crazy fights. Like, they've both been in nothing but exciting fights.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Except for, you know, some brief moments. So it's just a psychological issue, I guess. Who knows?
Francis said
that.
He said it was too, like, he had like a PTSD from his last fight, like,
that's
shit,
crazy.
I don't want to like get hurt again or whatever. But and he took a beating in that last fight as well.
You know, it's really
crazy.
He did.
Yeah.
People don't realize he did. He got fucked up in that fight. Like in
5 rounds.
What people don't see is how he felt after it, 6 hours later, 10 hours later, 24 hours later, when his 100%. Head's pounding and
the headaches,
he's
got to
close all the drapes and
light. Yeah,
no light.
Life, huh?
Yeah, man.
You want to be a fighter.
But the thing is, he's only been doing it for 5 years. That's what's really crazy.
And that's the thing. Look at him. I'm the runt of my people. You go to Nigeria, there's literally picks of the litter. When I went back there, I'm like, you should not be playing football. Big money in it, but I think, like, MMA, as like you can just grab any of those kids and give them some boxing gloves, show them how to sprawl, show them how to wrestle, and they're beasts. Like you, 10 Ngannous, 10 John Jones is just walking down the street. I had the same size head, and I was just a skinny boy, so I looked like a lollipop. I was a runt, bro, honestly. Like just a runt of the litter. But I had to work. I had to develop. I think maybe like around 15, I started to get taller. So every time I come back from school or from a holiday after school, it's like, damn, you got taller. Damn, you got taller. And then somehow I just filled out, realized I got athleticism. And then later on, like I was never the athletic kid playing basketball or anything like that. I was just the runt.
When did you get into martial arts?
I started in Taekwondo when I was a kid. Just because after school programs and it was fun.
Such a good one for kids, man.
Yeah, it was fun. That's why I liked it. Yeah. Like, Hana, do, set, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it was cool. But yeah, and then I think I almost got my yellow belt. Then my mom kind of pulled me out because I was just wrecking shop around the house, kicking everything. I broke my arm doing backflips off the couch.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
She was just like, nah, no more. And yeah, I found, you know, Ong Bak, the Tony Jaa film. I found that maybe in 2008. Yeah, 2008, early 2008, I found that, and I was about 18. And I was like, yo, this is cool. I don't know what this is. And then I found that it was Muay Thai. I found a Muay Thai gym, and then 6 weeks later, I had my first fight.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I found a video of that first fight, actually. I'll throw it up one day.
How old were you?
18. I was 18.
Wow.
Yeah, but I'm glad. People are like, oh, isn't that a little bit too late? But I'm glad that happened because I didn't feel like I was worn out. Because I've seen some kids who, protégés, fighting from like the age of 12 or 10, and then, you know, like in those smoker shows, and then like they get to a certain point and they just like, I want to do something else. Not all of them, some of them.
Yeah, they
and
then
sometimes they come back as well, but sometimes they just find, I'm sick of this, you know, I want to do something else.
You find that a lot with like sons of trainers.
Yeah,
sons
it was actually the fighters. Son of one of my first trainer, and he's doing something else now. But yeah, for me, I think 18 was a good year, like good age to start, and I just felt fresh. It was something I wanted to do. After my first fight, I was just chasing that again, that feeling. Because I've always been a dancer as well, so I like that roar of the crowd. So after my first fight, again, people were like, bro, that was sick. And I'm like, what the fuck did I do? I don't remember it.
You just went into a zone?
Yeah, bro, I was scared. The guy looked like David Tua. You know when David Tua had the haircut?
Yeah.
He was not 80 kgs. He was probably like maybe 92.
What is 92 in
kgs,
pounds?
Okay, maybe 205. So Jesus. 80 kgs would have been like, say, 185, 175 or something.
So he was way overweight.
Yeah, yeah. But my trainer kind of just, he was a crazy dude. So he just let it go. And that when you have to realize that at a certain point, I realized, okay, this is not the guy to get me to that level I want to be. Mm. So I left and I moved to Auckland, New Zealand, Auckland, the main city.
Was your trainer encouraging brawls too much or what was it?
He wanted me to fight his style. Like,
what was that?
Like he'd always tell me, like, you need to have your hands up. And, you know, he was a real purist of Muay Thai. Mm-hmm. So he wanted me to have that, you know, like the sway and stuff like that. And that's the difference between someone that wants you to fight like them and someone like Eugene, my coach. When he first saw me, he just like, cool. We can work with that. Like he never tried to make me fight like him. He never tried to make me do anything like this guy. He just said, okay, I want you to jab like this.
And well, it would almost be like trying to get someone to write songs like the songs they write.
Exactly. It's like, this is expression. This is art. Yeah. Let me do me.
And it really is.
Yeah. And he could never understand it. He was like, put your hands up. And I like my, people say, y'all, and people still say, get your hands up. I'm like, that's textbook. I don't read the textbook. I had to look at it. It was all right. I like the balance I feel when I'm over here. Like my takedowns, I was able to stuff them because my hands are already low. And I can still shell up when I need to. I can still fight hands up when I need to, but I like
there's
my hands
down. There's
a
different consideration when you have to stop takedowns.
Yeah, it 100%. Yeah. Even in kickboxing, my hands were always down a lot of the times.
Having the ability to get an underhook or double underhooks quickly.
Yeah.
But in kickboxing, the
thing
is,
I like my jab from there, from the low. From
right,
the low,
can't see where
low.
It's going. Mm. There's definitely pros and cons to everything, but a guy who's got the kind of speed that you have can take advantage many times more of having hands low.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Roy Jones. How can you say hands down's no good? Roy Jones Jr. kept his hands down all the time.
He had the eyes as well. I think you can train the eyes because my eyes weren't, I had quick reflexes, but I think you can train the eyes in certain ways just through.
Well, Roy could just land that left hook like a jab.
And he throws it like his shoulder. I think
it was just snapping in there, man.
Crazy.
Dude,
I remember that one with the four right hooks. He hit that guy with.
You remember he had giant biceps, but he didn't have big triceps.
Nah.
Like everything was hooks. It was all like from throwing
it's
punches.
It's a lead
in the
one
bag.
As well. That's the thing. Most people were always leading with jabs as well. So that would never help him. Lead left hook, that was something different at the time that no one could figure out. They couldn't crack the code.
Roy Jones Jr. in his prime. Yeah. People, it's like his song. It's like his song. Can't Y'all must touched. Have forgot.
Yeah. Oh, they forgot.
That's what it is. Y'all must have forgot. That was his song.
Yeah.
Because people did forget. Like,
but the first boxer I ever saw when I was a kid, because I never really watched fights. I was, you know, playing with sticks, toys, whatever, making my own shit. But I saw Prince Nassim Hammed, and I remember this when I was about 4. But he was, because I've always seen boxing on TV, but he was the first boxer I saw that just made me pause and watch and just smile and laugh. Like, what is this?
Oh, he was doing crazy shit.
Yeah. Just because the way he moved, and guys have always, I've always been drawn to guys like that, like Ali, even Rashad when he was in his prime doing his thing, Roy Jones, you know, like Pernell Whitaker, Sweet Pea, like just.
Dude, people forgot about Whitaker.
Exactly. He slept on him.
That shoulder roll. I mean, he was a master at that. Before we really saw it from Mayweather. Mayweather obviously has mastered it better than anybody. Yeah. He gets hit less than anybody that's ever lived.
Yeah.
You think about the fact that guy is 50-0, and really, I mean, you think about
still talks well, doesn't? There's not slurring. Gray. Can but, count.
Yeah, I mean, Mad Connor money. Clipped him with one left hand, like real clean, and that was it.
The uppercut.
Yeah, I mean, he hit him with a couple other punches, but none of them were like dangerous.
He rolled with them.
Yeah, I rolled with everything.
I fucked up in my fight because I at one point after I felt his jab, I was like, you know what? I can just close the distance a little bit more. And then that's how I got this shiner right here. But the right hands, this right side's fine because I was just rolling with a lot of them. I was rolling with a lot of them.
So you just underestimated his jab?
I underestimated his head movement at first. So in the beginning, he was moving away from my jab. And then Eugene said, all right, drop it down to the chin a little bit. And I did. But eventually I could adjust. I think from round two, I figured out the range. But his jab, it wasn't as powerful as I want, as I assumed it would be, so I thought, oh, I can just take and give, and that's how I got the shine. I ran into one of them, but yeah, it was a big mistake, silly mistake.
So on the same card, Uriah Hall fought Paulo Costa.
Yeah,
that's a lot of people are thinking that might be the next fight for you.
I told Dana, funny story. So we went to after my fight, I chilled in my hotel room, just hung out with my boys. But then after Dan's fight, we went out. And someone told me, oh, Dana's in this club. He's the same. I was like, oh, cool. That's whatever. And when I got some money, and I was talking to the guy that led me. And then, because he found out I'm a UFC fighter, he just led me to the private room. And I see McMahon. I'm like, what the hell? And then we just start yarning, talking to people. And he's like, I'll introduce you to Dana. And I finally meet Dana properly, and we start talking. And I dropped his name in there. I said, yeah, I want to fight Paula next. And he's like, they have other ideas. You know, fair enough. But I can, they've done this a long time. They're promoters, you know. So I think what they want is, me, you know, being a bigger name, Paul being a bigger name, and we fight like in some super fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I can see what that, you know, why that. But for me, I wanna take him out now. He just knocked out Riara Hall, who was talking mad shit as well. You know, but yeah, I wanna take him out now before, because we'll probably fight again. We'll probably fight more than once because he's one of those guys. Well, we'll see what happens. How long is the UFC career last? But I think he'll probably fight. Me and him will probably fight more than once.
Yeah, I would imagine that as well. I was very impressed with him versus Uriah Hall. It was interesting because the contrast between your fight on Friday night and his fight on Saturday night.
A technical brawl.
Mm-hmm. Mm. He got hit with a lot of jabs, but he is a relentless, marauding motherfucker. That guy's, he's very aggressive.
Yeah. And this thing's footwork. Uriah Hall, I was watching him, like, why are you right there? It's easy to look good against someone who just sits right there like a punching bag, you know?
Uriah had tremendous potential when we saw him in The Ultimate Fighter.
We all saw it.
But it also might be similar to what you were talking about with Sage Northcutt, who I also think still has tremendous potential and still very young.
Yeah.
I think there's an approach to take that you took that I think is really smart.
You know where I got it from? One of the talk shows, UFC talk shows, Kenny Florin just said it. He said, get your experience outside the UFC before you go into the UFC.
Wise words.
10 fights, 9 fights, and just like fight a lot of good guys, not just like, you know.
Listen to me, man. Bums. You don't want to fight you on your second fight,
no.
Right?
Yeah,
imagine,
100%, no.
Imagine you're a guy, you can throw a couple of good punches, you think you're a badass, and then your stupid coach says, okay, you're going to fight this guy. They call him the style bender.
Like oh,
okay. Yeah, I'll fuck up and do anybody, bro. I'll fight anybody. I'll fight for the title.
It's my mentality.
Yeah. Those guys, they get lit up and they don't understand. Mm. They really don't understand.
Jump in the pool too quick.
Conversation with a friend of mine who was a jiu-jitsu. He was badass jiu-jitsu. And he said he was going to go into MMA. And I'm like, okay, how long have you been training striking? And he's like, well, you know, he goes, for the last 4 months, pretty regularly.
4 months.
I go, are you out of your fucking mind? I go, listen to me, man. He was a black belt in jiu-jitsu, like nasty on the ground. I go, think about what you could do. If I was a white belt and I came in here and I didn't know shit and I was like a strong guy, maybe, you know, played basketball or something like that. I was just athletic and I tried to fight you. How bad would you fuck me up on the ground? Right? Now, think of someone doing the exact same thing like that to you with stand-up because you don't understand that there are guys who can do that
to
you. There's
levels to this.
There's Tyrone Spong. There's you. There's these high-level kickboxers that you don't have a chance. You think you have a chance because you're fast.
Yeah.
You don't have a chance. You're going to get hit.
Facts.
And you're going to get fucked up, and you're going to get hit multiple times. And they're going to chip away at you until they decide to move in for the kill, and then they're going to fuck you up. There's not a damn thing you can do about it. And it's almost the same as him grabbing a white belt, letting him flail around, and then eventually choking him. It's an inevitable thing. But the weird thing is some people don't see that. They don't see that someone could do to them in a certain art that they don't study.
Objectivity. That's the thing. Like, for me, I'm always thinking, like, in anything, why am I doing this?
Right.
Why am I feeling this way? And that's why I said I moved to MMA, because I just know I want to be the best. You know, I could have been the best kickboxer ever. I could have been the best boxer as well. But I just thought, in my heart,
there's a guy who could fuck you up in an MMA fight.
Right? No, just on the ground. I've seen so many street fights.
Yeah.
So many street fights. I'm like, dude, okay, just push your knee down. And like just holding each other and just hitting. I'm like, you can easily just choke the guy right now if you knew what you were doing. So
that's what makes a champion.
80% of street fights end up on the ground and people don't know what they're doing. So I just felt like I never want to be in a situation where a guy like gets me in an alleyway and tries to like fuck me up and just snap my ankle or some shit. But I just feel like I want to be able to be well versed, take care of all areas. And I'll probably never get there, but I'll die trying.
Well, how old are you now?
28. I'll be 29.
Dude.
In a few years.
You're you're still at least a year away or 2 years away from your supposed physical prime, right? An athlete, they say that for a professional athlete, I mean, obviously they say, what does that mean? Everybody's different.
Variables.
But there's something around age 30 to 32 where your mind and body catch up and you have a window there. Like Anderson Silva when he was like 30 to 32,
he's going. I remember that. Longest reign.
You would watch him and just like put your hands to your head and go, jeez.
The first one I saw live was UFC 90. He fought Patrick Cote.
Oh, that was an interesting one.
Yeah. But like for me, that first
very
round.
Very smart.
But that first round, he used like probably seven different styles to just hit him. And then I keep saying he uses telekinesis on his knee. He just blowed it out. But like
Patrick had a fucked up knee going into that fight, I think.
Already.
It's hard to tell, but it just seemed like it gave out.
It was a good fight. It was a good fight. Okay, he just stood on it and just like, fucked up.
I think he went to like throw a front kick and it just buckled on him and popped out.
Yeah. No, but like that fight, that first round, the way he just handled him, I was like, that.
Yeah.
That's the guy.
You know what? It really did open up the recipe to giving Anderson trouble, though, because the recipe to giving Anderson trouble, Talis Latis opened it up and so
Demian
did
Maia.
Patrick Cote. No, but the real key was don't engage. Because if you chase after him, he's going to fuck you up.
Like, think like
Forrest Griffin, all these different people that came at him. For sure, Chris Lieben.
And that was the first one, 90
seconds.
That
was the recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew when I saw that fight on paper, I was like, oh, this is crazy. Like, you got a guy who's like the most reckless, iron-chinned marauder in the UFC, and you're putting up him against a guy who's like a ninja. And this is going to be crazy. And this is a perfect fight. It was a perfect fight in terms of, like, you want to see, like, the effectiveness of, like, high-level timing, speed, and perfect technique. Like, woo!
Yeah. No, and the way he did it as well was clean. I think he only got hit once that fight. He landed, like, 100% of his shots in that fight.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
It's crazy.
And that's our style. I was a counter-striker at first. That's when I started. I was always like, I wait for guys to come in.
Here it is right here.
Yeah, look
I remember
that.
Calling this, and I remember telling people, because I was afraid. I was a fan of Anderson's from...
Look at that
watching
bounce.
Him fight in England. Look at that jab.
I
was a fan of watching him fight in England in Cage Rage and watching him fight in Pride. And I remember saying this, ladies and gentlemen, this is a different kind of striker. Like this is one of the first times you got a high level.
Look at the looks he's giving him as well. The shoulder feints.
And the lightness of his feet, man.
Bounce,
the lightness.
That bounce he's on.
People forget, man. Look how good he is. Ping.
He's over.
Yeah, ping,
boom,
ping.
Boom, boom.
Look at that. Come on, son.
Wait for him to get up again.
Yeah.
And that
ping,
knee.
Ping, ping,
shit.
Ping, ping.
This is
perfect.
Beautiful, bro.
I mean, come on, man. Almost every shot lands.
Boom,
he's not getting hit.
Boom.
It's incredible.
Ready?
Boom.
And it's over.
Insane.
And Chris was a beast, man. He could
a
take
beast.
A shot. He could take it all the time. There was one with him. Mike Easton. It was a guy. Rocked him. And he, as he's moving back, as he's hurt, and he drops the guy, knocks him out.
dude.
Cold.
Yeah, no, Chris could take a tremendous shot. Mm. He had unbelievable heart. But Anderson, I feel like in that's my argument for Anderson being the GOAT.
Yeah.
There's moments that he had. Oh, it's him and Fedor, right?
Yeah. I saw his kid the other day after my fight. I didn't recognize. I was like, in the elevator, I was like, you're Anderson's son. He's like, yeah. I was like, baby GOAT.
But the only other person is the current guy, is Mighty Mouse. The only argument against Mighty Mouse is he's cleaned out division out. Mm. He doesn't have a Chris Weidman, you know, a guy who's trying to fuck him up. He doesn't have, like, someone who you really give a chance
someone
to.
Someone on his level, quote-unquote.
Right, right. I mean, there's never been a situation where, like, Mighty Mouse had a Chael Sonnen who had him down on points in the fourth round, fucking him up, and then he catches him in a triangle.
No, that flyweight.
Flyweight, and he dominates, man. He just runs through people.
Yeah. Is he going to fight, what's his name? TJ?
Cejudo.
He's fighting next.
Yeah, okay, Mighty Mouse is fighting Cejudo in a rematch. Which he stopped.
He's got better.
Yeah.
Cejudo got better in his, since the first fight.
Yeah, Cejudo's an Olympic gold medalist in wrestling. Mm. That's all you need to know.
And his stand-up as well is clean. He's kind of improved. Oh. I'll give him credit. Yeah,
the Wilson Hayes fight?
Yeah.
He looked like Machida.
I like his flow, yeah.
He was crazy. He was like almost like McGregor or Machida. Yeah. You know,
just
he had
that flow,
sideways
the in and out. Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird.
So he can learn fast. That's another guy great at wrestling. Transfer that greatness into learning stand-up. Mm-hmm. And now it's just mixing them together. That's the thing. If you have to learn, like GSP did, just learning how to, like, mesh them together without, like, you know, getting stuck or thinking too much, just flowing with it. Yeah, that's the key, I think.
Particularly the Wilson Hayes fight, because it showed that he can adjust his style, like, pretty radically.
Yeah.
Like, when he walked out like this, I remember going, whoa, what is this? This karate, man. Yeah. This is crazy, you know?
Give him credit where credit's due.
Well, again, when you're a gold medalist in the Olympics in wrestling, that's a special kind of human being.
That's next level.
It's just a special kind of human being.
Even the wrestling training I do now, I'm like, fuck, sometimes. We have on Wednesdays. On Wednesdays, it's a VO2 Max called a Rate Wrestle Wednesday, just because it's like Aerodyne and then wrestling. It's 2 minutes on the Aerodyne, going hard with the heart rate monitor, trying to get to the red zone, and then wrestling for 2 minutes, trying to get to the red zone. And shout out to Kevin Bentley. He's the guy that shot on me the most this camp. So, you know, my hips were on point, because every time I'd, like, stuff a takedown, get back up, right, boom, another one. And I have to, like, Jesus Christ, just leave me alone, because he's just on you like a blanket. Yeah, so that kind of work is hard. So imagine being a gold medalist. What kind of wrestling training it takes to get to that level?
Well, that's why when you see a real high-level wrestler against almost everybody else, they have such a noted advantage in the clinch, like Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic this weekend.
Yeah.
Dominic Cruz, we're very fortunate to have a guy that knowledgeable because Dominic's knowledgeable about basically everything. He started out as a wrestler, but he understands MMA as good as anybody that's ever talked on a mic about MMA.
He's very clued up.
So when he talked about, like, he showed me some stuff that I hadn't caught about Daniel's giving up the underhook so that he could limp arm, and then Stipe would run right into the right hand, and they had it all timed out. Yeah.
Okay. I've already broken down the fight. I was already litty
crazy,
by that time.
And
I was
crazy.
I was yelling off my face, just like, wow.
Dude, when he connected and then he hit him, I don't even know if I said anything, because I remember I was going like,
I thought it was
going
to be five rounds.
It was almost like there was a deja vu moment.
Yeah.
Like the world just changed.
Shit.
Like,
holy
what?
Fuck.
Did he just knock him out?
I don't know. And it was so close.
Like, oh, and
dead
John Anik
on the ground.
John Anik stands up. There's
a picture
I put on Instagram.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful picture, man, because they've been working together for so long. When John Anik stands up and DC looks at him and they're looking at each other.
It's beautiful.
Look at that picture. Come on, man. Because who the fuck else is a two-time world champion in two divisions and also a commentator currently, and a great one.
Working two jobs.
God, I love that guy.
Yeah, man.
What a
and
good
guy. And I like
the
fact that he's chunky as well. Yeah. Because he just like...
Chunky's a nice way of putting it.
No, nah, honestly, he's chunky.
If that was a girl, what would you call her?
Thick. He a thick boy.
Like, he doesn't give a fuck, man. This ain't even fat shaming. That's the goddamn two-division champion.
I was talking to Ian, his nutritionist. He says, like, 246, but he doesn't move like 246. I was like, yeah, 100%. So it's deceptive.
Yeah.
You look at him like... Even Mark Hunt, he's another guy like that. But last Saturday, the way he was moving.
Well, Javier Mendez was talking about it in camp, and so was Bob Cook. They were telling me after the fight, they go, dude, at heavyweight, he's just knocking everybody out in training part. It's
y'all
training must have
forgot about Strikeforce. How about that? They forgot about Strikeforce.
They forgot about undefeated Strikeforce fucking Grand Prix heavyweight champion.
Tossing out Burnett, Bigfoot dropping him, all that kind of shit. I was like, and that was Barnett with five rounds. And he wasn't even like, he was early, that was early in his MMA career.
Yep.
So I was like, you guys don't understand. So I thought it was going to be DC putting them against the fence, grinding them out for five rounds, and still beating them up, for like fucking them up, and back and forth, but knockout in the first round. That was just
Crazy.
Out of nowhere. Yeah.
Crazy. I thought if DC was going to win it, what was going to happen was they were going to get into the second and third, and they were going to start getting tired, and DC's wrestling was going to take over.
Yeah. I thought it was going to go five rounds, unanimous to DC. But
I felt like he had to somehow or another wear Stipe out a little bit before he gets takedowns and get him
push
down.
Push him against the fence. Yeah. I thought that would be the smart thing to do.
But I thought it was real dangerous standing up because Stipe's knocked out Junior Dos Santos, knocked
longer.
Out Alistair Overeem, knocked out Fabricio Werdum with one punch. I mean, you think of all the people Stipe's knocked out, you go, damn, and DC's coming up as a light heavyweight?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, DC
only time
we
ever seen DC hurt was with Rumble, right?
Yeah, Jones, obviously. John Jones knocked him out.
Yeah, yeah. Can't forget that. Yeah, John
Jones
interesting too, man.
Capitalized brilliantly on a tendency.
Yeah.
You know, he knew that DC
they
had this
tendency.
About
it. Yeah. Yeah, leaning.
Mm-hmm.
I saw
and
that.
What's interesting is that Dominic Cruz explained this to me as well, is that this is how DC prefers to set up the single.
Mm.
And that he prefers to lean in
on that side.
Lean in towards his right side and then dive in on the single. That's his preferred technique.
Yeah.
He's very strong at dragging you to the ground from that position.
Mm,
so he has a tendency.
And everyone does. Every level, even John Jones, myself. When I was watching my fight, I've only seen it once. It was after the fight, rewinding. I took about an hour and a half to finish watching it, just rewinding, playing, drinking with my friends, whatnot. Because they understand, like, I just like to be by myself and just chill. So they're just doing their own thing, and then we're just playing games. But I watch it to see what I did right, and I enjoy it. I was like, okay, this is what I did good, blah, 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 blah. But then I see, how, if I was fighting me, how would I fuck me up now?
Ooh.
Yeah. So, like,
that's a good way of looking
I can
at
see
it, man.
Certain things, like, okay, this is, I need to work on tendencies, certain tendencies, and change it up, confuse people, scramble them. Some of the things I was doing in that fight, I've never done in training. Because, example, elbow pads. I haven't really worn elbow pads in training, just knee pads. I was using that Ong Bak elbow to set up how to close a distance. And I was watching, I was like, where did I learn that from? I don't know. Like, you watch, I did it probably three times. I'd use the fake Ong Bak elbow to close the gap, and I'd gallop in and catch him with a right hand or something. But I never, like, certain things like that were the things I did good. But then I can't really say the kind of thing that did bad.
But that, don't do that. But do you think that maybe that when you learn, it's almost like you're learning words, like in these words or techniques, and then combinations or sentences. And then in having the mastery of all these words, you just see a new sentence that you could say.
Yeah, I was like,
you already know
that's
how
nice.
To throw those, obviously,
yeah.
Even though you don't do it a lot in sparring. You just see the something he's doing, you're like, you know what, this is what, and then come in here and...
Yeah, there was like that one was nice, but there was one in my last fight before that in Arizona. Sean O'Malley throws this like spin and then the head kick.
Mm.
And in the fight, I was like, it feels right. Boom. First time I ever landed it. And it caught him on the back of the head. I was like, oh, good. And I just kept on moving with it.
Yeah, when Yair Rodriguez 360 roundhouse kicked BJ Penn in the face, I was like, oh, you got to be fucking kidding me, man.
Because
I was always wondering, when are we going to see this?
I've done one. I knocked down a heavyweight with it, like a tornado kick. And I learned that about a month and a half before. Shout out to David Daffith. He's a taekwondo champion from New Zealand. And he told me, because I used to throw it with the right roundhouse and then spin with it, and he said that's too much telegraphing. You're showing the guy I'm gonna kick you because he'll lean back and then you come back. So he said go southpaw and use your torso. So I'll give it away.
Yeah,
you throw your shoulder, your left shoulder from southpaw to kind of, after a few right hands, so you kind of I'm gonna throw a right hand and then spin that spin right there. Because taekwondo national champion, so you know, so that spin right there generates the force, and I was able to knock down the guy with it.
I never hit anybody with that.
Yeah.
I hit
make
the
sure,
heavyweight, heavy bag with that a lot.
Exactly. Make sure they can't move. So
yeah.
I like to do it when they're against the fence or they're against the ropes. So that way they have nowhere to go or not as much space to move around. But if you're in the open, it's hard to land that.
You know what's really remarkably effective is that Raymond Daniels sidekick to jump spinning back kick.
I can do it on the bag.
Yeah, I can do it
on
the bag,
well.
Too. I definitely have did it in sparring before, but when I saw Rick Rufus, one of his first fights, it was a really important fight with a Thai champion, where he was fucking him up in the first round. We played it back because it was a really interesting moment. I think on YouTube it's labeled as the most important fight in kickboxing.
Whoa.
And what it was the first fight where we got to see Rick Rufus in his prime face a Thai champion. And
this dude,
and Rick was winning in the beginning. And one of the things that he hit him with, he did that touch sidekick, spin back kick in the air. This is it. The fight that changed history. Is this Lawrence Kenshin as well?
Yeah.
Yes.
Lawrence.
That guy's a treasure.
Love his work.
Yeah. Go Google him or check out his videos on YouTube. He's got so many
He
awesome
and Jack
breakdowns.
Slack. And I like the way they kind of work off each other as well. Like a lot of these guys, they're not really, there's no competition. They're all working through, together for the greater good.
Well, they're all very important. And Robin Black as well. Like, yeah, all these guys.
He's crazy.
Yeah. What I really love about Lawrence, though, is that, you know, he breaks down things and shows them in slow motion, as is Brendan Dorman and Jack Slack. There's a lot of these guys that do
what
this.
What weight was that?
I don't remember. Yeah. I don't remember how much Rick weighed. I know he went up to like 200 pounds, but I think he started out in the 60s or 70s at the most. This Thai guy's pretty thick.
Check out the pants.
Yeah, well, he didn't understand how to deal with the leg kicks. Yeah. Like, this was what chewed him up. Yep. But early in the fight, I think in the first round, see, this what this is showing is how the Thai starts taking over with the leg kicks. Mm. But I think in the first round, he hit him with that side kick, jump spinning back kick to the face, and really hurt him.
Yeah.
This is Lawrence's breakdown. Instead, boom, this is just going to show how he lost.
Yeah.
See how he tried to throw that body kick and got checked.
Yeah. Nice 4x2 though. Hit him with the
He hurt him with that left hand.
Yeah, 4x2.
Yeah, he dropped. Oh shit.
Beautiful.
Yeah. No, Rick had his moments in this fight for sure. And it showed just what a dangerous striker he was, but we just really didn't know back then about the leg kicks. Mm. So interesting.
The Thais, they're the ones. Huh?
Yeah.
I felt some Thai guys, their legs literally feel like just concrete.
Yeah. You they're broken down from years.
And mine
of
are
all kicked.
Right. Like, it feels like a stegosaurus is back. But some Thais, when you feel it, it's like steel.
Dude, I felt so... The first time somebody kicked me in my leg, I felt so vulnerable. Because I couldn't believe how easy it was.
100%.
My first thought was, God damn it, I have to recalibrate everything I thought about fighting.
Yeah, I fought a karate guy, a Kyokushin guy, on maybe 2 hours notice. Because my opponent decided, at the weigh-ins, he's like, I'm not fighting him. And just fought off.
What did you do that made
nothing.
Him say that?
I'm black. I was just he was like, nah. And then like this guy, Jamie Eads, who I fought I think 4 times now. So he came over to corner one of his teammates, and he was a national Kyokushin champion. He's like, I'll fight him. Cool. Jump in the ring, and this padded fight, everything. Yeah, 2 leg kicks in. I was like, whatever, I can keep going. And then by the 4th one, I remember like, ooh, okay. Don't do that again. And then from there, it was too late. That was only in the first round. He ate my legs. He ate my legs. And I remember for about 3 weeks after that fight, walking was just, I didn't want to walk. Every time I'd be like, can you pass me this? Or just like crawling places. And I would hate walking. But fun fact.
How long?
About 3 weeks. Maybe two and a half, 3 weeks after that fight. And it's just, you know, your legs are dead, heavy, filled with blood, bruised. Ugh. And it's just any little movement, because your knees are swollen as well.
Sharp pains.
Oh, hated it. Fucking hated it.
How long did it take before you recovered?
Probably, yeah, about 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I heal quick. Like, honestly, it's weird.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I don't
know
why.
Randy Couture, when he fought Pedro Hizo, needed 6 months of rehab?
Shit, 6 months.
6 months,
damn. Because he still has a dent in his leg, apparently, from that
Pedro.
Fight. Shit.
Dude, Pedro gave a dent to Kevin Randleman, too.
Shit.
I never saw anybody kick
thick
a bag
guys.
Like Pedro.
Yeah.
Or kick a people. But I was at Beverly Hills Jiu-Jitsu in the mid-90s, and Boss Rutan was running it back at the time, and Pedro Hizo was over there.
Yeah,
and Marco
Huas.
Dude, they had this big-ass 200-pound fucking heavyweight, and Pedro Hizo folded that thing.
Shit.
It made me so nervous.
Was it hanging off the ground, or was it
touching?
Yeah,
it was hanging off
the ground. Shit.
But it was just this... Boom. It was just a different sound.
And I don't think, maybe it's the bones. I think it's just heavy bones as well.
He's a dense motherfucker. Yeah. He's a thick dude.
Thick boy.
His legs were giant, but there was a feeling of this very, you know, sometimes you hear someone or you see someone kick something or something, and you go, oh, I could never, that no one can take that. You can't take that. Pedro had that. Mm. He had that, you can't take that. He hit Rico Rodriguez once, and Rico was like, fuck this. I'm
no
going
thing.
Down.
Check
he's,
out.
He's like, you try to bring this guy to my guard. I was like, fuck you, man. I'm going to stand up with you. He hit him so hard that Rico stayed on the outside the whole fight. He never really completely committed to trying to win the fight because it was
too
dangerous.
That's a heavyweight, right?
Yeah.
Is the guy with the problem, PED problem? The wrong guy?
Rico? Did Rico get popped for PEDs? Maybe. I don't
There's
know.
There's a documentary on them.
No.
There's another guy
You're
from
thinking
the UFC.
Of Mark Kerr.
Oh, yeah.
No, Rico, no, right. I don't think Rico got popped ever. No, but Rico was a Machado Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt.
Okay,
he was a heavyweight champion.
I think I'm an American wrestler.
I think Tim Sylvia beat him for the title.
Yeah.
Tim Sylvia, when he was at the top of his game, he's a big, giant motherfucker.
Is he still fighting?
No.
Yeah, retired now.
He's just bow hunts in Iowa. He's all giant now.
Shit.
He's 300 plus.
He's like 6'9".
He's a huge person.
Big boy. I always looked at him. One thing, I was just Gumby, like a big guy, but he could fuck people up.
He could fuck people up.
Yeah, and he was real when you get a baby giraffe trying to figure out its steps,
mm-hmm.
but he just knew how to move and how to use his gumbiness to his advantage.
Well, if you go to the golden age of Tim Sylvia, pull up Tim Sylvia KOs Rico Rodriguez. This is the golden age of Tim Sylvia. Back when Mexican supplements were more easy to come by.
I didn't find none of that. You know what I'm saying?
the drug test back then was like, they would like pee make you fill out a piece of paper. Tell me what drugs you took. Hey, I passed the test. I wrote zero.
Yeah.
It was fucking, everybody was on the sauce back then.
Honestly, man, with all the PED kind of talk, for me, I kind of, I thought, yeah, some people, you know, take steroids, whatever. But after I seen Icarus, everyone's on steroids.
Well, everyone in a lot of countries.
Holy
shit. How crazy was that documentary?
Holy fuck. I was just like, everyone. Nah, but like, there's, the cheaters are always going to be ahead of the solution, the guys who are catching them. So whoever is on the new shit, they can't get caught just yet till they update their testings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I watched that and I realized, if you have the team behind you and you have people who can fund it, everyone's on steroids.
Don't you think that USADA, they hold their piss for a long time, right? Don't they hold your piss for like 8 years?
I tell them just, use it for research, whatever.
Yeah, but I think they hold on to it just in case new testing comes out
so they can test it again.
They took gold medals away from two Russian cats in the 2000s because they went back and with new testing found EPO in their system.
Shit.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. That documentary was amazing.
It opened my eyes. And I had a piss test the next day as well. I came to my gym. I was like, I told the guy, I've seen this. I saw this on the documentary last night, the little cup they were using. So, I was like, who knows who's on steroids now? And when USADA came through, you know the guys that kind of like their bodies changed. Some of the people dropped off.
Radically.
Yeah, quick. Radically. So quick.
Really quick.
And it's like, woo. Damn, I never thought.
Yeah.
Like
not just changed, but changed to the point where, like, you're not even the same person.
Yeah.
You're, like, doing an impression. And guys in their 20s doing an impression of who they were just a couple of years ago on the sauce.
Yeah. Weird. Shit's happening, man. Everyone
they got caught up
eyes.
In a bad
I'm snitching.
Loop. I saw that thing with you and the golden snitch.
Man, he's a man.
He sent it to me. He was all excited.
He texted me as well.
He's laughing. Nowitzki's a good guy, man. Yeah. He's just like, he's got a bad reputation from a lot of people. Like,
I can be cool with him because I know me. I'm not cheating. I'm not a guy that, it's
never
interested me.
Well, he doesn't even do that
anymore.
I mean, now he's, what is his official title? It's like athlete.
But those who are cheating
wellness.
Wouldn't be hanging around him like the way I would, or wouldn't be as friendly with him because they don't want him sniffing around. You know what I'm saying?
He's there to make sure that someone doesn't cheat on you too, though.
100%. I'm like, please.
What's so funny?
I'm not mad at it.
What's that?
It's on his Wikipedia.
What does it say? The golden snitch.
G-Snitch.
Jeffrey John Nowitzki, the golden snitch, is the vice president of athlete health and performance for the UFC. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Brendan Schaub.
Made it.
Look what you did. Brendan Schaub, look what you
that?
Did.
Golden snitch.
God damn, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh shit!
Well, I'm glad he's around, man. Honestly, because I don't mind being an ambassador for the sport if it's like a clean sport. Because back in the day, even as early as 2010.
Hey,
2012.
Find that Tim Sylvia Rico Rodriguez fight.
It's only on Fight Pass, and I don't.
That's
have
it.
I can't find it anywhere.
Damn,
he sounds just like the voice
KO
of my head.
On YouTube?
I've been looking for a lot of different.
That's
places.
Weird. Like when you look at him talking, it's like,
oh right, because you heard him so many times.
Yeah,
I know it's weird being here. Right? It's weird being here for me too, man. Believe me.
Bro,
freaks me out.
I quit my job September 4th, 2013. Before I quit that job, I think you were the first podcast I started listening to. Now I've got a few others, like a whole list. But I remember having those my headphones in my ear, just one, so I could focus on the other things. And my boss would just ride me for so long, like, just take that shit out your ears. Stop listening to music. I'm like, I'm not. I'm just trying to be entertained so I don't go postal on you niggas. Honestly, because it was just, you can enjoy what you do. Some people fight. When I was living in China, I knew a lot of guys that fought, but they didn't enjoy it. They just did it because it makes good money and they get paid. And I'm like, do something else. But for me, doing that job, holy shit, soul sucking. Every single day, you wake up, train, and then it was just a block away and I'd walk to work and I just knew I was going to get just ridden that day. And man, but it's kind of crazy now. I'm checking in like I'm actually out here. I've listened to this for so long and it's like, I belong here now. Like, it's weird. Everything just seems normal.
Good. That's perfect. That means you hit the right time. Yeah. That means you've got a good sense of timing.
Just like, because sometimes, even in my room, I had a nice suite for this one. Shout out to the UFC.
Shout out.
There's that main event status. So I had like a nice little spot, conjoining rooms with my teammates. And sometimes I'll just overlook the T-Mobile arena and just be like, okay, like we've made it. We're out here. Like we're not done yet, but like
but you're there.
Yeah,
you're in the hunt.
Okay, let's go. And they just kind of check back in.
You're in the UFC, and now I mean, you had to break into the top 10 with that fight. I don't think the rankings have come out.
Fuck rankings, man. Right. Honestly, like
what are they?
So stupid.
You know, like, they fucked up Paul Felder. Paul Felder would have got that shot against Khabib in
that
Brooklyn.
Fight. What is a welterweight? So it shouldn't even affect. It shouldn't even affect the lightweight ranking.
No, it shouldn't. But I'm not talking about that fight. I mean, the reason why Paul Felder didn't get that fight with Khabib when Tony Ferguson hurt his knee is because the athletic commission wouldn't recognize him. He wasn't ranked in the top 10. They wouldn't recognize him to be
able
to fight.
That would have been a great fight.
Great fight.
Quinta was a fucking
Dope
fight. He handled that well. But
Paul Felder is a big fucking lightweight.
Yeah.
And Paul Felder has outstanding striking. That would be a real interesting fight.
100%. So just because of rankings, they didn't let that go through?
Just because of the rankings.
Who makes the rankings? That's one thing I want to know. Who decides what the... Like, is it like a group of them? Nah, but like, what have they done? What's their credentials? Where have they trained? Have they fought? Are they just like analysts? Are they experts? Because it feels like if you want to be...
Instead of figuring out who did it, let's think about what you would do differently. Like, who do you think should be... Who do you think should be making the rankings?
The
fighters?
Rankings. Maybe ex-fighters.
Ex-fighters.
Or like someone who's been in the sport, someone who's trained. Same thing like you say with judging. Someone who's actually like involved.
That's a big one,
and understand. Oh, dude, tell me.
The judging scares the shit out of me, man.
After my second fight in the UFC, I fought in Glendale, right? It was a split decision I got. In my head, when they said, you know, Israel, 39-38, Adesanya, I was like, oh, fuck, come on. Just don't, because it's my win bonus. I don't give a fuck about my record. I'm just like, don't fuck me out of my money. Don't fuck with my money. Like, one other incompetent judge, and that would have been it.
Yep.
Done.
Yep.
Only half my money.
Yeah.
And that would have pissed me off.
Ooh, so crazy.
So I was like, what have you done to, like, how the fuck did I lose that fight in your eyes?
It is one of the biggest problems the athletic commissions have.
Can't they just, like, it seems like it's too much work. Like, shouldn't it just be, like, maybe a group chat? Like, okay, let's change the 12 to 6 elbow. Who's agree? Yep. Cool.
Oh. That's a no-brainer. That one's the dumbest one of all time.
Well, like, why it takes so long to try and make any change in the sport?
For years. Well, how about the weight classes?
Jesus.
You know, Kevin Lee tweeted the other day that there's something like 150 different fighters in between 155 and 170. Or I think he said more than that. I think
you hear
it's
what
more
Michael Chiesa said?
What did he say?
About him almost dying. Felt like he was going to die when he was cutting weight.
Well, definitely don't fight at 155. Yeah.
That's scary for a guy to say that.
It is scary. Mm. He should be probably fighting at 170.
He wants
anyway.
A 165 class, I read on that tweet.
Well, it's a good class.
Yeah.
It should be 55, 65, 75, 85, 95, 225.
I can do 185 and 195. If that was, I'll take that. I'd be jumping between those two.
Yeah, why not? I mean, that's doable.
Yeah.
I think the real problem is you give guys like 85, 205. That's 20 fucking pounds, man. That's a lot of weight.
Yeah, I walk around 205 if I'm healthy, if I'm DC'd out.
Well, that's good. Mm. That's a good amount of weight to cut. Like, I bet when you get real lean, you probably lose like 6-7, then you're only losing really cutting like, 10? 10, 13?
This camp, I didn't use a sauna, I didn't use a bath for this fight.
Nice.
Normally, like the last two, I did, and I was underweight. And I only cut a little bit as well, but this one, I woke up on weight.
Do you use an expert to help you, like a Lockhart or something?
I'm gonna, maybe for the fight week, use Lockhart next time, maybe. But like, normally, I've done this for a long time, so I know my body. And I'm always accurate as well. I can feel like I'm about 98 kg, 93 kg today. I'm about 85 kg right now.
And what about
tell.
Rehydration?
Lockhart method, the old one. There's a whole system like with the waxy maize, amino acids, eating pineapples with crackers and honey and whatnot. So I follow the list and my coach.
Why pineapples with cracker and honey?
I don't know. It's on the list. It's a Lockhart one. It's
So it's like carbohydrates from the crackers and honey.
Talking to the wrong guy. I would know all that kind of stuff. Like for me, that's the thing. I have guys like my coach Eugene who knows why, you know, and he'll just tell me do this and I trust him.
Right.
Yeah. But I know it's a Lockhart method and they've updated it because I talked to Ian and he said that was the old one. I sent it to him and he said they've updated it. So I said, okay, next time probably I'll use them for the fight week weight cut and then the rehydration. I'll try the new one.
The toughest you've ever cut? Like how heavy have you ever gotten?
Let me go back. This is probably early on in my career. No, actually there was one in China where I fucked up. I was fucking around at the buffet or something, maybe like the fight week, you know, and then I think I cut 4 kgs in the sauna. It was easy on the last one, but before that I was just like mentally sitting there like, shit, never again. I'm never doing this again. And I start to like visualize the fight, like I'm gonna make this guy pay. And I start to get delusional and delirious. But yeah, 4 kgs is not bad. I've heard worse. I've heard like 6 kgs in a sauna, and that's a lot on like someone who's not even that fat or that. Not that
what
much
is that
body fat.
13, 14 pounds?
How I many keep using kgs, damn it.
That's okay.
I know pounds.
What is how many pounds is that?
14.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot.
30 pounds?
Yeah, it's like 2.2, so.
Oh, God, that's right. I'm going the wrong way. Mm-hmm. I'm going the wrong way.
Here's the pineapple thing.
Oh, here it is. As you get closer to the actual weigh-ins, we cut back on the fat and start incorporating frozen fruits. Mm. Interesting. Something I use a lot is pineapple. The reason is dietary fiber will hold water. If I put a bunch of water into a bowl and lettuce is brown and wilted, the next day it will absorb the water via osmosis and be good lettuce again. Whoa, I didn't know that. When you guys are near the end of your weight cut, they are cutting back on how much water they take in, so they don't have to worry about the body absorbing the water. That means we can give them the fruit, which is going to help them fuel the brain. Interesting.
Yeah, that.
Interesting. Huh. Now, what kind of shit do you eat? Like, are you on a very specific diet, or?
I see food and I eat it. I like food. I'm hungry.
Dude, of course. Must
my
be.
The best thing is, like, for me, it's weird. When you're not allowed it, you want it more.
Of course.
Yeah, like fight week, when I get here, and I start to, like, crave just the good stuff, and I go on these Instagram pages, like, Tasty, and I just watch, and I save it. And I write down what I'm going to get when I get back home. And man, it's like food porn for real.
Yeah.
And you get hot just thinking about it. Oh, my God. And then after the fight, once it's time to weigh in, I'm good. And I'm just like, all right, eat healthy, get it done. I don't like pig out. Like even on the one I got from Lockhart, it says do not eat pasta until after the fight. Because apparently that can slow you
pasta.
Down. No pasta.
No
pasta. In capital letters, do not
what
eat
about,
pasta.
What about like maybe a quinoa pasta or lentil pasta? Does that count?
That would be better. I think just
sprouted
like regular.
Grains.
Yeah, I think just like maybe pastry pasta, that kind of stuff.
You ever have that Ezekiel pasta?
Not yet.
I like that shit.
One thing, do you have any elk?
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
how long are you here for?
I got a spot till Thursday. I just kinda,
do you have a place where you can cook?
Yes.
Oh, dude, I got you. I got you. I got
I just
freezers
try
back
it. Yeah,
there.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. The easiest thing I'll give you is I'll give you some elk sausage. That's the easiest to cook.
Yeah, easy.
And I'll give you some directions, and I'll give you elk steak.
Okay.
And give you a direction. Do you have access to like some sort of a grill with a lid on it?
We can get it, yeah.
Temperature control grill?
Like a barbecue grill.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got one
just
at
the spot. Just as long as you just want to make sure, and you got to get a digital thermometer. You want to make sure the meat stays somewhere
a certain temperature.
Under. Yeah, you don't want to keep it.
Yeah.
You definitely don't want to cook it past 120 degrees.
Easy. And I can follow instructions.
Okay. Well,
I'm coachable. I'm coachable.
I know you are. You must be. But you know you can't learn on your own.
Yeah,
you,
100%.
You know both. The thing about a guy like you that's interesting to me is like it's very obvious that you had very good technical training, but then you deviated and you figured out your own creative path. And something you said earlier, which I think is really important, and it's a good thing to hear for people who don't really understand martial arts, is what you do really is an art. I mean, you're expressing yourself. You know, there's something.
I've always been.
And for a person like me, who's a fan of that martial art, and I understand what you're doing, I watch it, and I'm appreciating it. It's like I'm watching ballet or a symphony. I'm watching art. I'm like, oh, look how he set up. There was one time when he trapped his wrist and cracked him with an elbow. And I just
you know what
like,
that is? Is that's like almost like NLP. Because some people are used to things coming at them at a certain speed. So what I did, like he had his guard up and I was just like, just give me your hand. Boom! And I just hit him
dude.
With it. So like he gave, you watch it, he kind of like just.
Well, he thought you were going at a slow speed.
Yeah.
And like, then he sped
NLP,
it up
because I'm used to, you know, he's used to the fast thing coming out of him. And I was like, right, just give me your hand.
Well, that's the change up in baseball.
Yeah.
They throw a slow pitch and you're like, what is this? And you whiff it and you're like, fuck, how did I miss that?
Because
you were expecting a ball to be so fast.
I've heard the term before, but I don't
that's
know
that's
what
the change up is.
Okay, the change up.
So if a guy throws like a 98 mile an hour fastball, but all of a sudden he throws one that's like a fraction of that.
Yeah.
I don't know what fraction.
So
you
swing
know
too
baseball,
quick.
Right?
They swing too quick or something.
Yeah, they swing too quick. What would be a change up pitch? Like how much slower would it be?
20 or 30 miles an hour slower. It's like
30%, yeah, yeah. So it fucks
slower.
Your head up, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're expecting that ball to come. Zip. You see him throw it. You're like, yeah.
And
then you
miss.
See, fuck, it hasn't even gotten here yet.
Deception. That's what it is, bro.
It is
my
deception.
Game is just deception.
Well, the
I like
question
to lie
mark
there.
Kick is the ultimate deception.
I got a few more.
Oh.
That's just the basic one I use, but I tried one on him. You might catch it. It was a changeup from a left kick to a front tee. But it just went right
there. Here it is right there.
It slipped.
Here we see the highlight.
Boom.
Ooh, that was pretty. You know, another one that you see Wonderboy likes to use is that front leg sidekick, front leg roundhouse kick combination.
Yeah.
He comes in, touches you with a front leg sidekick, and then saw swap.
Boom. Yeah.
Raymond Daniels, though, has the prettiest version of that.
Yeah.
Jumping sidekick, spinning back kick to the face that he did in Glory. Like,
that was sick. Made that guy do the splits.
Woo!
Damn, that was
when
nice.
When you see a guy who can do that in a kickboxing match at a very high level, that's when you realize, like, whoa, this guy, like, you can't give him any room.
Yeah, 100%. Well, he likes space.
Joseph Valtellini and Nicky Holtzkin, when they fought him, that pressure. Was really interesting.
Yeah.
Constant pressure and leg kicks, chopping that leg, chopping that leg, chopping that leg.
Yeah.
You know, but what I like about your style is you basically do both of those things. You do the wild, crazy shit, but you also do technical Muay Thai.
This is what I mean about, I kept on saying about Uriah Hall being a button basher. Like, you know when you play Tekken and you just kind of like play, you just hope something cool happens? That's what he does. And I'm like, establish your basics first. Establish your foundation. Land your jab. He did it in this last fight, but like normally, establish something first, and then the cool shit comes afterwards. You can't just like, and he's had success with knocked out Gegard with the spinning jumping back kick, you know. But like, I think you'd have better success at landing those things if you establish your basics first, land your jabs, set the pace.
Well, he was landing a lot of jabs in that fight.
In
but
that last
Paulo
one,
Costa was just constant, relentless with his pressure.
Yeah, I think I called it 2 minutes before it happened. I was like, I told Ash, friend of mine, was like, he's fading. He's gonna go soon. He's going soon. You can just see it when he starts to like, and maybe because I see it, that's what I look for in a guy, or they tell me, like, I'm ready to go. I'm like, all right, cool. I'll help you out. I just take him out. You can just find it. Like, you look in their eyes,
what
or
you
feel
see?
Them.
Like, you when you feel, see a guy who's starting to crack.
You feel them.
You feel them wilt?
Yeah, you feel, you, it's,
feel
a, it's an energy.
Down.
It's an energy. Like,
right. They're
you
not
just
as
see
dangerous?
The, yeah, and he's, okay, he's ready to go. Like, example, my first fight, shout out to Rob Wilkinson. I actually brought him in just to help me out. Not for this camp, just for his wrestling pressure. Rob Wilkinson, he's a good guy. He's my first UFC fight. But when I was fighting him, it was in the second round after his last takedown attempt. And then I, like, stuffed his head, got my leg out, and I skipped back to the middle. And I saw him walk back, like, circle. And then, and just the body language, I was like, oh, you're ready. And I throw my hands up, like, what's up? And then pop, knee, boom. And I just kind of, like, just picked him apart slowly. I didn't rush it. Like, I keep telling, I don't rush these knockouts. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, he hurt Brad about 3 times. But, you know, he didn't go for the finish. I'm like, I'm not trying to bum rush these dudes. I just pick them apart. They will fall eventually.
Well, not only that, here's something to consider for people that don't really totally understand what you're doing. You're doing everything correctly. You're not really getting hit much.
Yeah.
You're doing everything correctly, and by doing everything correctly, you're kind of ensuring to continue your domination in that fight versus put yourself in danger, which some people like. Some people like, I just like to bite down on my mouthpiece and bang.
I love me adjusting Gaethje Michael Johnson.
Yes!
But I'm not going
to
be
watch.
That guy. I'm not going
to
be that guy because I'm not here for a long time. I'm here for a good time. I just want to keep my wits about me.
Yeah.
Fight. Like Mayweather, get in, get out. Make your money and fuck off. That's what I want to do.
You're fighting correctly.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, if you're trying to teach someone how to hit and not get hit, you're fighting correctly.
Facts.
But in order to push further, if you were trying to make it more exciting and engage more, you have to risk getting hit.
Yeah.
And that's not a wise thing to do.
I take risks. I like to take risks when I play with my distance. Like, okay, am I too close? Am I too far? And before I take those risks, I calculate. I know what he's going to do already. I'm like, I can bait them with something. Like, if I want them to jab, now get closer. And when he jabs, I slip and rip. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I take risks, but I calculate my risk. And sometimes I might do some wild shit like that in Minari roll.
Yeah.
I fucked up on that one because it was a little bit slippery. And I landed in training. I catch it all the time, but I didn't account for the sweat on his legs. And I got back up anyway. And I was like, come on. It was a good one, you know, but.
It's a crazy thing to do. You're also very honest when things don't go your way.
Yeah.
And then things go wrong. You had a kickboxing fight. Was it in Glory?
Yeah. No, that was the one with in Brazil.
In Brazil.
With, his name? Alex. Yeah.
Alex that Pereira, one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Pereira, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you lost, and you were talking about what it was like to get knocked out.
Yeah. For me, that's everyone's worst fear. So that, for me, was the first time. My first back-to-back loss, because that was just after the Glory fight. And my first knockout loss.
But the Glory fight, although you lost, a lot of people thought you should have won the decision.
I won the fight. You know, if you look at him, I don't even base it on that. But, like, we both knew. Like, I hit you more than you hit me, you know?
Yeah.
And people were like, well, he had the pressure. He walked you down. And the commentary, being honest, was bullshit. Because, I mean, respect to a guy like Valtellini, but he can't fight like me. He can't understand my style. His fight, you look at his career, he had to take time off because of, you know, trauma. Because that's how we fight. So he appreciates that kind of style. But what's his name? Wellness walked me down, but he really couldn't do shit. Leg kicks are supposed to slow you down. I didn't slow down. I was still dancing around him in the fifth round. I was slipping and stuff. I was fresh, you know? But, yeah, that fight, I felt like I won that fight, but it's all right. So, you know, it wasn't meant to be. Everything happens the way it's supposed to happen. I wasn't supposed to get that belt, and I'm okay with it, you know?
Well, the fight was the fight.
Exactly.
It really was just the judges that people have a dispute with. The actual fight was a successful fight for you in that you did land more shots than he did. Mm. But then losing the next fight.
By KO.
But you talked about it online. Like, you were real open about it on Instagram. Yeah. And
because that's the fear. Like, every fighter, like, if it was just me and a guy fighting and I lost, it's like, oh, whatever. But when you put it in front of, you know, millions of people, that's the fear. It's like, oh, shit, I don't want to look like shit in front of all these people.
What did you get hit with?
I was southpaw. Was a left hook from him. And before that, first round, I teed him up. Second round, I rocked him. But then from that wellness fight, I let some bullshit get to me. Just online, you know, like people in your life, is not even online, people in your life saying, oh, man, you know, you should have won that fight, blah, blah, blah. Guess you shouldn't leave it in the judges' hands. You know, they'll say some shit like that, and it just seeps into you. So when I heard him in that second round, I just went berserk. What people expect me to do, or what people in the UFC do, just like, I started throwing bombs, and just like, I was only throwing right hands. I just started only right hands at him. And I watched that fight back. I haven't watched it in a long time, but when I watched it back, I was like, why are you doing this? Because that's not me. That's not me staying true to myself. What I would have done if I was, you know, being true to myself is just, all right, cool. Where's the shot? Boom, boom, boom. Just pick
Mix
him apart.
It up. Do what
and
you
he was
do.
Hurt. He was hurt. He was out on his feet already. So it's a good story for him. You know, like, he knocked me out at the third round after he got rocked in the second round. But I mean, yeah, it was good for him. But hey, if we fight again, because even after my UFC debut, he put like a contract up, like he's coming to the UFC as well. I'm like, all right, make your way up. I'll fuck him up, 100%.
He's a very good kickboxer too. Yeah. I mean, there's
twice.
No shame.
That's
in losing
he,
to
no,
that guy.
He's beat me twice, and the first time as well was another weird. You know, he's walking forward, and you know, not landing shots, but I'm moving back and hitting him the whole time. And the judges gave it to him, so I was like, all right, credit to you. You got the fight, but I'll fight you again. So. If he makes his way to the UFC, he can get it anytime.
Is he trying to fight MMA now, or is he?
I think he's had MMA fights. He's had MMA fights, but a lot of kickboxers, like I said, my boy Brad, even he realizes like MMA is where it's at. You know, the UFC, they see the way best run company I've ever like come across. I fought around the world, fought for Glory, fought in China. No one runs the show like the UFC. Like everything has a place and a time, and it's just so. Clean and you get your money quick. That's one thing I like about the UFC as well. Fuck,
it's a well-oiled machine.
Definitely,
you know? I mean,
yeah.
they've been running it that way since 2002, and now the new organization is basically most of the old organization.
Yeah,
yeah, it's nice to work for, man. I still enjoy it after all these years. Like,
when's your next one? Next one's in LA, right?
Yep. Next one is next. TJ versus Cody.
Yeah,
the rematch.
Sick fight. Woo! I can't wait. Oh fuck, that first fight.
Do you feel like after the last Robert Whittaker, Yoel Romero fight that your weight class is kind of in this weird state? I mean,
what do you mean?
Well, it's Whittaker won the fight, but a lot of people thought Romero might have gotten the nod because he knocked him down and hurt him, and then he hurt him again in the next round. A lot of people thought at the very least it was a draw because if you look at it on paper, Whittaker never really hurt Romero, but Romero did significantly hurt
him.
Whittaker twice.
Yeah.
And, you know, he came off of knocking out Rockhold, but then again, he didn't miss weight, so that kind of puts it in
turmoil,
too.
That's for me. I don't really care as long as...
I think he's moving up.
I
think he said he's going to go to light heavyweight. Yeah, I think that's the most recent
How tall
statement.
Is he? How tall is he?
Like, he's not that tall.
Yeah.
Dude, that guy is built like a brick shit house.
He looks like an action figure.
When
but
he came in
tall.
Here, when he came in here to do a podcast,
oh,
it was
yeah,
in
did
between
too.
While I was in camp, you know, and him and Joey Diaz translated and shit.
Yeah.
I was looking. I'm like, he's 230 pounds. He's fucking huge. How's he going to make 185?
That's how I felt when I first met Anthony Johnson. I was like,
yeah.
What? How the fuck?
How the fuck did he make 170?
Dude, I was like, literally, I saw him. He's just like a thick burger, like huge. And he hit me once, I think when we were sparring, only once, like a clean one. And I was like, I'm not getting hit by that again. And that was it.
So dangerous.
Yeah, 100%. It was good work. I enjoyed the work we got together, but definitely you don't want to get hit.
Is he a hard spar, or will he spar light with you?
No. Because I was the guy that brought in for him to mess up. But it wasn't. I didn't let it happen.
Woo!
I was making sure, like, nah, stay away from that. There was one, he teed me, and I went from one side of the cage to the other. He hit me. You know that teep he does? Like the side teep he just pushes
right,
you?
Like an elliptical?
Yeah,
or
oblique. One, yeah. Oblique kick, yeah. And he just did. And I went, hit the fence on the other side. I was like, yup, he's a big boy. And I was I was probably maybe 90 kgs at the time, so that was about 200 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's a motherfucker. You don't want
to
spar him.
Yeah, to get down to 205 is a bit of a struggle, which is just so crazy.
Don't get me
that
wrong. He got his licks as well. It was back and forth. Yeah, 100%. But it was good work.
How did he make 170?
I have no idea.
I saw him in between fights at 170, and he was 230 pounds. I was like, What do you weigh?
You see him now? You see him on Instagram?
He's huge.
Yeah. I saw him like a couple weeks ago. It's just like,
well, he said if he's going to come back, he's going to come back as a heavyweight.
Perfect.
Dude.
He's and he already been a heavyweight. He'd be fucking do the heavyweight.
He just couldn't answer the puzzle that was DC. DC is the one who really had him figured out.
Yeah.
DC just figured him out, man. DC just knew how to break him.
I think it's just the gas tank as well sometimes. Like he puts his foot on the gas too quick.
Mm-hmm.
And also learning how to not be conservative, but manage your gas tank.
Yeah.
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 A lot of people don't know.
He would just swing for the fucking bleachers. And
That's most of the time
when he did that, he would just put guys in a coma.
Mm.
You know, and I just think at a certain point in time, you know.
He was on a tear. He was that motherfucker.
Oh, dude. He was that motherfucker for a long time.
What was the one he had with Glover Teixeira? That didn't look like much.
No.
The uppercut. It didn't look like much. And it was in the middle of a scramble. Like they were just working. And then,
dude, it was amazing. When he hit him with that, I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
He had ridiculous punching power.
Yeah.
Like some of the most ridiculous punching power
guys
I've ever
like
seen.
That, Mark Hunt, him. Who's another one? Rampage had that as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't understand.
Chuck did it back in the day.
And Chuck, what I like that he had it was because he was long as well. He wasn't really a thick guy, but I think it's his levers, his arms. He just knew how to whip that. What are they fighting, he and Tito?
I don't know, man, but there's a video of Chuck working out. He's working out with Ray Sefo.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
See that?
Yeah.
Everybody was like, ooh.
Shit. Maybe I'll give him credit, benefit of the doubt, because I'm like, okay, maybe he hasn't hit pads in a while. Let's see, maybe 3 weeks from now,
when
4 weeks
fighting?
From now. I have no idea. Young Jamie, pull that up.
I would think that. I would say that, right? It feels good.
Yeah,
it feels good.
Yeah, maybe 4 weeks. Let's see if he keeps the training up. He might. It's like riding a bike. He didn't look like Chuck of old, obviously, because we have something to compare it to. But he's not going to be like that either way, but let's see if he can get better from what that was on Instagram.
But also, he's a 49-year-old guy, and he's probably warming up.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Hopefully that was just him throwing, getting loose, and then maybe 3 rounds in,
Do you still spar?
No.
Oh, real?
No.
Just chill. Do you roll?
I roll, but I'm 50 years old. I can't get hit in the head.
Yeah,
fuck off, for real.
Ah.
I can't get hit in the
head black
anymore.
Black don't crack.
I'm old enough to not be willing to get hit in the head anymore.
Yeah, same.
When I stopped when I was probably 28, 29. When I first moved to L.A., I still did some kickboxing. I went to Benny the Jet Center in Van Nuys. Remember Benny Urquidez?
Benny the Jet.
Original OG kickboxers.
Yeah.
Him and Blinky Rodriguez had the Jet Center in Van Nuys. And for me, there was two things that I wanted to do when I came to California. One, I wanted to go to Hard Times Billiards, because Hard Times in Bellflower, California pool. One of the legendary pool halls in the country.
Yeah.
And two, I wanted to go to the Jet Center in Van Nuys. And I went there, dude, and it was all like gang members.
Yeah.
And Blinky Rodriguez had like a program where he would let these gang members in and, you know, have them all take classes. So you'd be sparring with like hardcore gangbangers.
Yeah.
They had like one dude had this like really shitty tattoo on his back with his gang.
Yeah.
I forget the name. And then it said, fuck the rest on his back. And we're both putting our mouthpieces. I'm like, Jesus, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I grew up in the suburbs.
It kind of happens though. Gang activity kind of like just seeps its way into fight. They find their way into fight culture somehow.
Yeah.
It's always been a part
Blinky,
of it.
I believe Blinky Rodriguez lost his son to gang violence.
Oh, real?
Yeah.
So is that why he did that?
He had an open up program where he was letting kids into the gym and trying to help the community and help these kids. I apologize if I got that wrong, but I think I got that right. Please look that up. Blinky Rodriguez's son dies in gang violence. I'm pretty sure that's true. Blinky Rodriguez was a famous kickboxer, too. He knocked out Jean-Yves Thériault when Jean-Yves Thériault was like the PKA champion, one of the most feared guys in the world.
Is that point karate in there?
No. It was PKA karate with kickboxing, but it was above the waist like Rick Rufus style.
Okay, yeah.
And Jean-Yves Thériault, is that true? That he did lose his son to gang violence? Yeah. Mm. Jean-Yves Thériault fought. See if you can find Blinky Rodriguez KO's Jean-Yves Thériault. And Thériault is T-H-E-R. I forget all the rest of the way to spell his name, but he was the man in kickboxing in like the 80s.
Because
he was before my time. He had pretty decent kicks, nothing special, but ridiculous knockout power in his punches.
Was his hands like boxing?
Boxing, yeah.
Nice.
But Blinky Rodriguez caught him with a left hook and starched him.
Shit.
And that was always like one of Blinky. Here it is right here. They're fighting. This is like one of Blinky's claims to fame.
Throwback.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
Which one's Blinky?
Blinky is the guy in the blue shorts.
The blue, all
and
right.
Jean-Yves Thériault is the tall Montreal guy. Yeah. He was an interesting guy, man. He was one of the first advocates of stair running, too. He was...
Okay.
Yeah, he was...
Sprints.
Yeah, well, running hills and running stairs because he felt like for kicking power.
They're good for you, but fuck them.
Fuck them,
There's something about gravity. Oh, nice.
Well, Blinky was a karate guy. He had all kinds of crazy shit, spinning back fists and all that shit, but he had this, boom, there it is, son.
Yo.
Blinky had a ridiculous left hook.
Stiff.
Look
oh,
at
yeah.
that.
The arms.
Watch
boom.
That again. Boom. That's beautiful.
I like how I set that
one
up
more
as
time.
Well.
Yeah.
From that low kick. Boom.
Boom. Boom.
That's
beautiful.
Textbook. See, that's
beautiful.
Textbook.
Beautiful.
Nothing wrong with textbook.
So it was an honor just to be there in Blinky's gym.
Oh, you were right
take
there.
Take classes
on
with
his
him.
Gym.
This
yeah,
is
yeah,
way
yeah.
later. I came to L.A. in 93.
Yeah.
So it was 93 when I was
Follow
here.
The dream.
Yeah. Follow the dream.
From where?
I came here from, Boston to New York, New York to L.A. So I started coming here around 93, and I think I joined the Jet Center, but they had got damaged from the earthquake in 93, and the fucking roof, when it would rain, it would just flood
Leak.
The whole gym. So they had to wind up moving.
Shit.
So, glory
nice
days.
Life.
No word on that fight. It's booked for later this year.
Which fight?
The Ortiz Liddell.
Oh, later this year.
Yeah,
just no word.
Later
in terms
this year.
When.
I wonder how Chuck Tito looks as well. Maybe
Way
see
better.
Him hitting pads.
He looks good. Mm. Look, Tito has been winning. You know, he fought recently. Beat Chael Sonnen recently. Tito is.
Oh, that's right.
Still,
Bellator.
Yeah,
yay.
He's still active.
He's active. Oh, yo.
Yeah, I saw Tito hit pads. He still looks good, man. He's still a beast. He's got a. Gang of back surgeries though.
Yeah.
Knee surgeries and back surgeries. Shit. Tito's his whole back is all surgery, man. Mm. There's a crazy video of him. He's lying unconscious. They got him sedated and the doctor has a hammer and a chisel and his neck.
Shit.
And he's going like this. Clink, 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 putting some spacer in his neck, like fusing his neck together.
Shit. Fuck that. I'm not about that life.
Dude.
Hell
that,
no.
That headlock life is a different life.
As wrestling, because he was a wrestler by
dude,
trade.
All those wrestlers, they all wind up with like some sort of catastrophic back injury. It's just a matter of how long can you hold out.
For me now, I'm trying to be preemptive because for the longest time I kind of like just neglected all that stuff with like chiro, physio, whatnot. So now I'm like, if I want to fight at this level and be healthy, avoid injury. You got to look after yourself in that sense.
What kind of strength and conditioning work do you do?
Strength and conditioning. Sun is a guy that does my strength and conditioning work. And thing is, I know not much about these things. Like, even when he tells me to lift, like, put some template, I never ask what the numbers are. Because if I know what the numbers are, I feel like I might get daunted. Like, oh, shit, I can't lift this. And then I'll ask afterwards, like, oh, what was that deadlift? He'll be like, oh, that was 180. I was like, okay, cool. That's all right. But, yeah, I do shit like deadlift, a little bit of bench, a lot of band work, a lot of plyometrics, like exploding.
Mm.
Yeah, learning how to just fire. Like when he says go, he's not just working the muscles. He wants to work the mind. So when it's time to explode, the mind just knows it's time to move. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like quick twitch.
And how many days a week do you do it?
Two times a week. Yeah.
And when you do it, how do you schedule your – does someone schedule all of your workouts or do you do it yourself? You have input? How does that work?
I have input, but my main coach, Eugene Behrman, he's the one that schedules my workout.
So he says today we're doing wrestling, tomorrow we're doing –
We have a timetable. So for each camp, we'll adjust the timetable accordingly. So, for example, when I go back now, I'm not going to do any VO2 max, no A-lactic capacity, all that kind of stuff, no camp stuff. I want to go –
Because it's after the fight.
After
so
the fight,
skill
yeah.
work
I'm,
after
yeah.
the fight?
Yeah, skill work, yeah. Just upgrade the software. But also because, I think I've done well this year. Three fights in 6 months. I'm like, you know what? Take my foot off the gas a little bit. I'm just going to chill.
How long will you chill for, you think?
Probably till September, maybe. But in that time, I want to go back to yoga, Bikram, because my flexibility is kind of – I felt it in this camp. It took me a little bit longer to get my kicks going. Mm-hmm. And Eugene was teasing me, saying I'm getting old. And I was like, fuck that. I still have it, but like I just think I need to get my flexibility back to where it was.
When you do plyos and things along those lines, do you stretch heavily afterwards?
Yeah. Afterwards, I should and I try to, but sometimes I just neglect that. I forget.
Damn, that's kind of so important because that's the time where you really have some opportunity for stretching, really advancing your range of motion.
After plyometrics, really?
Yeah, well, anytime explosive exercise, you're really tired, your muscles are completely heated up. Or, you know, Bikram's great for that too, because you get a lot of exhaustion of the muscles, then you have that extreme heat and everything's super pliable. Like when I go to Bikram, I can still do a full split. But if I had to do like a full split right now, like it'd be a little bit of a struggle.
I felt the way when I went after Bikram classes, I was always more loose.
Yeah, like, but I could that heat is something, man.
Yeah. Someone can hack it though.
They need to hack it. They cut the shit. Of course you can hack it. If it was between live or die, never see your family again, you or wait 10 more minutes in the sauna. Shut the fuck up. You can hack it.
Like, even just for the first session I ever did ever in Bikram, I sat there. I didn't push myself as hard, but I just sat on the mat if maybe that pose was a little bit too much or if I felt some type of way. But listen, I'm African. I can handle it.
That ain't bad if you can't. Look, the whole thing about it is adaptation. If you overrun your body right away, you're not going to recover as well. You're not going to enjoy it as much.
Yeah.
If you can't get through a 90-minute Bikram class, but you can do 60 minutes, then you have to sit down for 10 and then jump back in for 10, then just do that.
Exactly.
Know your body.
They
have
even
some
tell you, just sit down.
Water.
Just sit down for the first part and just feel the heat.
Just
try
sit
what
down.
You can, and if you can't do it, just sit down.
Dude, that shit is so good for you. I know Bikram's a crazy asshole. I know there's all this
thing. I've heard some stories.
I know he's crazy. They did an HBO, but here's the thing, man. Just because he's crazy doesn't mean it's effective. You can't throw out the baby with the bathwater. I know that dude's nuts. But also, here's the other thing about Bikram. Although he's a great yogi and his system is amazing, I don't even think he came up with that system. I think that system has existed for a long time.
And like one of from India or something.
Yeah. See, Google this, please. I think he lost a lawsuit based on him trying to copyright those sequences of yoga. And I think the problem is that the yoga, those moves, all those moves have existed for literally thousands of years.
But who's trying to claim them?
Well, he was trying to claim them in succession. So, like, say if you opened up the Style Bender yoga class and you used all Bikram's moves.
That's not a bad idea.
Not bad. I like
style
it.
Style Bender.
Especially if you want to meet yoga girls. Hey, holla.
Sit in the back of the class.
Holla.
Sorry.
Need some help. What he is essentially saying is that he came up with this idea to put them all in that particular order, which is a super effective order. Mm-hmm. Like, his order of yoga poses is an amazing order.
Is it the
order.
Same worldwide? Wide?
Yep. Okay. Everywhere you go. I've taken classes everywhere. It's all the same.
I thought it was just because I only went to one, so I thought it's the same thing for that.
If you do the, well, there's, you know, there's like vinyasa, there's flow classes, which are also very interesting.
Yeah.
But and I've taken those too, but there's something really good about the 90-minute Bikram program. He just has it nailed.
Yeah.
He figured it out. But I don't even know if that was his idea. I think there was other people that did that. He sued people.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Shit.
He's gangster. He's so crazy. They had this, I mean, I don't even mean it in a good way. They had this HBO documentary where they're interviewing him, and he was talking about girls saying that, you know, he banged them and all this different thing. He goes, listen to me. He goes, there are people that would pay $1 million for one drop of my sperm.
Oh.
$1 million.
Oh,
he's
wow.
getting interviewed by HBO. Shit. And he's like, this, like as if there's a bunch of people like waiting, like an auction Jeez. House filled with people. Like, who wants 3 ounces? Right here, $1 million. We have $1 million for one drop of sperm. Who's in?
How old is he? What does he even look like?
I'll take 3 drops.
Like what kind of specimen is he? Is he like an old type dude? Is he in shape?
He's not holding it together the best.
Okay.
You know, like if you and him, if you're both the same skin color and you didn't see your heads and you looked at your torsos, you would know who's who.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, let's put it that way. I mean, he's like a 70-year-old guy. I mean, how long can you hang
in? Can he still
there?
Make sperm?
One drop of my sperm, $1 million.
It'd be like
dollars.
Powder.
$1 million. Yeah, he's, there he is. Holla at your boy.
Okay.
Still looking jacked.
A little
is
bit.
That him? Let me see. Go large on that picture. Not bad. Probably
he's
eating
right.
a little, few too many carbs.
Yeah.
Needs to get some squats or some hill runs in. But when it comes to
sags.
Yoga, he's flexible as fuck and knows how to do all that shit.
Doesn't look 70.
Well, you know what, man? Look, when you let's go back to that picture again real quick. There he does. Go back to that picture again real quick in his underwear. The one on the art, one right above that, yeah. Listen, man, let me just be real
Gravity's
as fuck.
Gravity's a thing.
And let's be real as fuck. If you walk around wearing underwear like that in a yoga class, you're there to fuck.
Mm.
That guy's there to
facts.
Fuck.
Mm.
He's there to fuck. And if you leave a girl alone with him, he's going to touch her. He's going to pull that Indian dick out. He's going to send it home. He's going to send, like, as if, what's an Indian dick? As opposed to like a.
To bring it out with
French
a flute.
French dick. Comes out like a cobra. Look at that guy. I mean, he's wearing little tiny skivvies.
My man's out here.
And if you're a dude and
that's
you commit,
me at 70.
You can't be like an amateur yoga
Holy
guy.
Holy shit.
Wow, look at that girl. He's
that's from
on
the Kama
hips.
Sutra.
Yeah.
Might be.
Yeah. Okay. You can't have underwear like that on and not be good at yoga. Like if you're like a beginner and you fall down every time you try to do eagle pose, they'll talk to you. Hey man, why don't you put some more clothes on? But if he walks in there with
his
man bun,
he earns the right to flex.
Yeah, he's got the right to flex, man. You know what I mean? I mean, he's fucking. It's like, I don't know. If you were a bowler, you had a bowling glove covered with rhinestones. Like you better be
Michael
good.
Jackson glove style
right.
thing. Yeah. Oh, that's
right.
the thing. Someone should do it.
Someone should do it. Right.
Bowling glove with rhinestones on it.
What else do you do? Do you ever do gymnastics?
Gymnastics? No, I dance.
What kind of dance? You said that earlier. I forgot to go back
to
that.
So I started off with popping as a kid. Now I'm crump. I crump dance. That's like, yeah.
What's a crump dance?
Crump dance is actually originated in L.A. It's
really?
South Central L.A. Like Tie-Dyes and Big Mijo started it off. But I remember I watched this movie as a kid called Rise, and that's kind of what introduced it to the world. Kind of like the way Ong Bak did with Muay Thai, made it more mainstream. Rise, it's spelled R-I.
This is it right here?
This is popping. This is with Poppin' Pete. Look up a guy called Tie-Dyes. T-I-A-T.
This guy's good. Look at him go.
Poppin' Pete's
the
shit.
Hold on, let that guy go.
So this guy is from the Electric Boogaloos. So this is how I started off.
Look at him go.
Back in the day.
What's with the towel, though? Seriously. Are your hands that sweaty?
He'll probably use it with a move or something. Oh, yeah, he's a man.
It's so strange, like, that people went thousands of years without these styles, and then when electronic music came along, people went, oh, the sound's different. Let's move different.
Yeah. But for me, I had this metamorphosis last year, like, around my birthday, and then, for whatever reason, I just went back to dance, because I felt like I had this dance. You know how people get writer's block?
Mm-hmm.
I had dancer's block for, like, maybe 6 years or 5 years. I just couldn't create. I could dance. I could flow, but I couldn't create anything.
Do you know Lomachenko studied 4 years of Ukrainian dance?
I heard.
Yeah, classical Ukrainian dance.
One thing I learned is muscle memory. I know dancers who have to do shows, and they have to learn like 20 different sequences, and that's for the whole show, like 20 different. And each sequence might be like anywhere from a minute to 3 minutes, and they have to do it like that. So when I started dancing again, when I went back to training, drilling, I can retain that information so much better. Like, it's muscle memory.
Right.
So I don't even have to think about certain moves when I do it. It just, boom. Because, I remember this. It's easy. And the muscle just does, like, how do you do that? I wasn't thinking. So dancing really translates into muscle memory like that in the effortless way. Like, dancers, I think, have the best muscle memory, or maybe one of the best in the world.
Well, it makes sense that you're learning to use your body in a choreographed way, almost like a kata. You know,
like
I used to think katas were stupid when I was a kid. I used to think, I really did. I used to think it was dumb.
I thought they were cool.
Well, I think they look cool when someone's doing it, but I hate learning them. I felt like I only learned them to get the next belt, but then once I learned them, I forgot them totally. But now that I think back, I realize like that was a mistake on my part, because what that was I thought I knew better, which is hilarious. Yeah. I thought I knew better than people who learned martial arts for thousands of years. Yeah. And it's not that kata makes you a better fighter, but it makes you have better control of your body.
Yeah.
And the thing about like holding a side kick up in the air, there's a lot of people that just can't do that.
I can't. I've seen like Daffod, he's the guy taught me Taekwondo, like literally his dexterity in his legs, he'll on one leg, pop, 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 while moving forward, and he'll do it the other leg, like all the way down, all the way back up, southpaw. Orthodox.
I think there's a balance, and I think the balance is between that and maybe
the Thai style. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to find. And sometimes you can go one side too much, but it's just you have to be objective enough to know, okay, this is what I need.
Yeah,
this is how you know, and you feel your body. You kind of, and for each fight as well, you know what you want to use.
Right.
Like with him, I was gonna throw some spinning shit at some point, but I did.
Nick Diaz has changed what spinning shit is by saying that. We're throwing spinning shit now.
I met him. What's his name? It's after I saw Dana and them, so I was walking around with Tony. Shout out to Tony Angelov. And then I see Jay Silva, who's the guy who used to fight. He's a thick boy. He fights, I think, out of Ruka. And he just kind of recognized, hey, what's up? And then he got me into the club. And then, Nick Diaz showed up. I said, hey, what's up? How are you? And I just shook his hand, and that was it. And, he's legend
in the
game.
Guy.
Cool
he
guy.
He is a legend.
He's still fighting?
Well, he's doing whatever the fuck Nick Diaz wants to do right now.
I just
see him
in Las Vegas all the time.
I think he's only going to fight for a... I think this is... I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Yeah.
I think the lack of the UFC talking Nick Diaz into a fight. I know he's crazy, and he knows he's crazy, too. Mm. That is a criminal, criminal underuse of a valued asset. I think if you wanted to have a giant pay-per-view right
now. He's a big star.
Fuck, he's a huge star. So is his brother.
Yeah.
But they haven't fought in forever. Yeah. Like, Nate hasn't fought since he lost to Conor in the very close rematch. I think he's going to come back for
the big money fight.
Well, probably. He made a ton of money, and you know he doesn't live a crazy lifestyle. And I believe Nate just got a kid.
Real?
Yeah. I think. I think I read that on Google. Yeah. See if that's true. Nate Diaz just had a child. Either way, congratulations.
Yeah,
Nate.
Salute.
Either congratulations you had a kid or congratulations that you did. I love that dude, though. Yeah. I love Nate and I love Nick,
the style,
too.
The way they fought.
They're fun.
I remember that Paul Daly fight. I watched it live. Bro.
Yeah, man.
I don't think I sat down for that fight.
You were there live?
No. I was on the couch.
Live on TV?
But I was standing up on the couch.
That was a crazy fight.
Shit.
He got clipped, too. He's one of the rare people that's got clipped by Paul Daly and survived.
Yeah, come back and then knocked him out. See the way Paul fell back as well?
Damn.
The stanky leg?
It's almost like his legs just gave out. Like he's exhausted.
Yeah, that's what it is. Exhaustion. Yeah. I keep saying it's easier to knock someone out when they're tired.
Yeah.
Like that fight. What's it? Brad had good cardio. He was able to take it. And I was finding it. There was one I hit him with a body shot. I think a body kick. And yeah, he went for a takedown straight away. I pushed him off, framed him, got him against the fence or something. But yeah, it's easy to get. Like some of these guys, you can see. He never gave me that sign like I'm ready to go. Like when they're ready to go, like I want out.
You know, one of the most overwhelming performances of Nick's career was against Frank Shamrock.
Oh, dude.
That was when I was like, whoa.
Just body shot. He put his head on his chest and just bop, 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 bop.
And was that also pace. Talking shit to him. And Frank was like, really? You're talking shit to me?
Yeah, I saw that interview. He was like, I couldn't believe it. It's like, but honestly, like that pace, even like my first fight, it's sort of Diaz-esque in a way where it's like I didn't do it when I knew he was ready to go. I just, all right, put a steady pace. Just put your foot on the gas a little bit, but not gas it out.
Right.
Just pop, 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 pop. Find the shot. Right. There's no need to, like, it's wasted energy.
Well, you've got a wise approach to just your overall MMA game, but in particular to your striking game, is that you're one of those guys that's showing people that you can be very exciting, but take minimal. There's a couple moments in that fight where Brad was charging at you, where you're like, hup, 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 here we go, and we're out the other side.
Yeah, 100%.
To me, that is
take the center. People don't take the center, man.
Almost as exciting as watching someone get knocked down. I like watching someone figure out that, like, the right hand's coming, the left hand's coming behind it. I'm not there. Here I am.
It would have been a clean sweep if one judge didn't give one round to him. But I don't know which round he gave, because I thought I had all five rounds after watching it. So
just
it was like
judging. You can't even
50-45, 50-45, and then 49-46. And I was like, damn, that would have been cool if it was just like a 50-45 clean sweep.
Well, the most important thing was not a judge's interpretation of it. It was the actual performance.
Yeah, and people enjoyed it. Some people were like, you know, they get caught up in knockouts a lot. Like, oh, he didn't finish Brad, though. But a lot of people, the response was, I'd rather see that than just a quick finish, because he worked the guy. He didn't get gassed. He didn't, you know, I didn't dip. Maybe the third round I might have dipped a little bit, but I didn't look it. I had my poker face on. I was fine. I felt fresh. And I even said after my last fight before that, like, I was based on a three-round camp. The one I fought in Arizona, it was based on a three-round camp. And I looked in the camera. I was like, I can go five rounds. I told Eugene, my coach, I was like, man, I feel like I can go another two rounds easily. And this camp was based around five rounds. So after this fight, honestly, I had the reserve ready. I was like, maybe three rounds I could have gone if I needed to. But
do you ever anticipate a time where people would have more than five rounds at an MMA fight? Most of the time it's totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
But sometimes
I thought it was too long. I was like, I'm going to get this guy in like three rounds. I thought so. I felt so. I was like, I don't know. Maybe that's just me bigging up myself, you know, my own ego. But yeah, I just felt like I would have taken him in two or three rounds. But five rounds, and I still look good doing it. So I was happy with it.
Now, when you see a guy like Paulo Costa, who has like this just, I mean, he's not totally hittable, where like everything you throw you're gonna hit him, but he's much more aggressive, much more in your face.
You see these
what short arms?
I was still next to him. He iced me. He's trying to act like he doesn't know who I am, and I saw interviews like, oh, I do not know that guy. It was like, dude, you know who the fuck I am now. You know, and I said after my first fight, because these guys want to pretend, and I don't know where it comes from. Maybe because of years of not getting noticed. So I'm like, don't try and act like, because a lot of guys, they'll creep on my Instagram and then like see me in real life and act all high and mighty. And I'm a nice guy. I like to, you know, be friendly.
Of course.
Yeah, I like to hug people, say what's up. I at least just nod like, hey, you know, what's up? I know who you are. You know who I am. But some people flex too much. So for him, yeah, he knows who I am. And his manager, what's his name? The fucking Gremlin. Cameron. I don't know. No, he looks like fucking Ariel. Was it Ariel? He looks like, you know.
Waleed Ishmael.
You know, Undertaker's
dude,
guy.
Do you know who he is? Waleed is a mixed martial arts legend.
He fights.
Dude, he fought in UFC 12.
Really?
Yeah. He fought Takahashi. Is that who he fought? Maybe it was 13. UFC 12 or 13. Dude, he choked out Royce Gracie in a jiu-jitsu match in Rio. When Royce Gracie had just won all the UFCs and he was a fucking man.
And he fought him in Rio
Waleed
jiu-jitsu.
Ishmael, who was a Carlson Gracie black belt. Watch this. He got a hold of Royce, and this was in Brazil in a giant fucking audience. It was in a soccer stadium, I think. It was a big ass audience, and
crazy.
They wound up going to the ground. Scoot ahead, and Waleed got him in a clock choke. And I remember this because at the time, I was like maybe a blue belt, and I tapped a guy with a clock choke, and I was like, clock chokes are that shit.
Yeah,
and he.
I remember those with the gi.
Clock chokes. With a gi,
I tried it a little bit. I can do it when it's not sweaty, but with my arms, because I got long arms, so I can kind of get it a little bit if I tweak it right.
And Waleed had that constant Waleedji, they used to call him. He had that constant pressure, Carlson Gracie top game, crushing, you know, where you're gonna shit out bone fragments after you roll with them.
Yeah,
that was their style, man. Like, scoot ahead a little bit, and you see Waleed gets that clock choke. So
you can tell he's the guy that's like talking for.
Right
Paul.
Here, right here. He got it here.
Yo.
And he wound up putting Hoist to sleep. Hoist didn't even tap.
Yo, he's out.
Went out like
he's
a
out.
Warrior.
He's out.
Yep. Look at that. Look
he's
at that
out.
Fucking
he's out.
Pressure. Look at everybody shit. Running onto the mat.
You got to let it go. Fuck, that was
well,
a little bit too
long. Well, he didn't
know.
I mean, he was on the outside. Yeah.
The referee should have known.
Yeah.
I saw it was out.
Yeah.
It was limp.
No, you're right.
Shit.
But this was back. See, there's Carlson back then. This was when there was like a bit of a rivalry between Carlson Gracie and, you know.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, I mean, Hickson and Hoist and Hoyler. And there was a bit of a rivalry.
He was out.
He was a beast, man. So that
so
little
just
guy.
Managing now? He's managing now.
He's taking care of fighters and stuff like that, but he's a real legend.
Yeah.
Waleed's a beast.
Oh, his spec.
Yeah.
But like, he's the, like, for real. He's the guy. He's the guy that I think talks for Paula a lot because I respect him trying to learn English as well. That's one of the reasons I was like, I really want Uriah Hall to win because he was talking all this shit.
Right.
And if he wins, I want to see him. And I want the build up for that fight will be fun because I will fuck him up.
You felt like there was holes in Uriah's game. Like you were saying, it was like
in his game
the
as well. In Paul's game as well. There's holes in his game. But
what did you see in Paulo?
Paulo,
can you say?
He gets hit. Easily, and you don't want. You know how Uriah was tapping him with the jab.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to. If I was behind those jabs, it'd be different setups. It'd be a different setup. I can come up with few other pathways after that jab. Like Uriah was hitting the jab, but that's it. Hit the jab, and his chin's up. He'll hit the jab, and what do you do after the jab? After you land it 7 times, you got to do something else with it. You can't just keep jabbing him. If
well,
you want
seemed
to,
like
you can.
Costa had extreme confidence in his ability to knock out Uriah.
He didn't respect his jab. He will respect my jab. Like, look at my knuckle. So this is my moose knuckle. This is my regular knuckle. I'll show the
moose
camera.
Knuckle.
So this one's a little.
That
that's from.
Been
that's
worn,
from. Yeah.
Son.
No, that's from. What's his name? It got a little bit more swollen because of Brad Tavares.
Mm-hmm.
This is my regular knuckle, and like I was jabbing him at first. Credit
is that
to him.
Swollen right now from the fight?
A little bit, but normally it's just good.
That's
forever.
A rock, son.
Yeah.
That's a triple knuckle. That ain't even a double knuckle. That's a triple.
It's a
knuckle.
Moose knuckle.
Ouchie, wawa.
Yeah, but with Brad in the beginning, my jab, he was slipping it. I was like, all right, and then you just said drop it down. And at one point, he tried to counter it like Tyrone Spong, slip the jab and counter. But I recognized it. I was like, okay, cool, drop it down. And I hit him I think I went down to the legs, and I took away attention from the top. Then I was able to go back to the jab, and I busted him with the jab.
Now, when you train in, do you spend time to work on traditional moves like wheel kicks and side kicks and all that shit that you throw occasionally, or do you throw them into your overall pad work game, or how do you?
The pad work, Eugene, he has his own system, and he knows what everyone's different, so he treats every fighter as an individual. You know what I mean? So he knows with me what he can do on the pads and what I like to pull. And if I have an idea like, oh, try this out, he's open. He's not like, he's a very open man. He doesn't understand. He doesn't try and limit you from what you can do or what you can create. So all the spinning stuff, all the creativity, the things that I kind of bring myself, I try just 2 a.m. just walking around my house, shadow boxing sometimes, you know, just in my own free time. I just think about certain things like how can I do this different. Even someone like Chad Mendes, there's something he does, like he fakes the shot and uppercut. I like that. We're completely different body types, but I like that. And I have my own setups for that just because I feel like it's a good move. But we're different body types, and mm-hmm. he has his own setup. So I like to create on my own, and then if I have any ideas or anything that I feel like can work well with the pads or with our flow, I'll let him know, and he's open to it.
Well, you're one of these guys that's coming up right now that's in this new wave of MMA fighters that is every – it seems to me that there's like an incremental increase in the skill level. There's always all-time greats like Cain Velasquez and, you know, fill in the blank. There's like Anderson Silva. There's these guys that burst out, and they stand out as extreme performers.
Yeah.
But there seems to me like right now to be a new – Zabit Magomed Sharipov, that guy, there's a few of these guys that are coming up where you watch them, you go, whoa, there's some next level. You recognize, like a guy like me who's seen it for so many years, I go, okay, there's some next level shit going on right now.
Yeah, 100%.
It's like we're talking about Lomachenko. Mm. Like Lomachenko's footwork and movement, this is next level shit. I've seen a lot. I mean, I'm sure there's been some all-time greats. When you go to guys like Pernell Whitaker and guys like Floyd Mayweather, you know, artistic geniuses. Mm. But there's something that Lomachenko is doing that they're not doing.
Yeah.
Right?
100%. Like, even some things, I watch his footwork. I watch the way he looks. Like, and you see my fight as well. I like to look at guys. I don't just, like, close my eyes and hope. I don't throw in hope. I aim and fire. That's one of my quotes. I say that. But he does the same thing.
Yeah.
He likes to look, and he's aware of where he is.
He knows. Crunching.
Yeah, 100%. He's chunking. He's chunking all that information.
He's like
physically,
trying to...
muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, he's a dancer. He learned, 4 years of ballet. All that stuff, rhythm, timing, offbeat, onbeat, it all translates well into fighting, like easily.
Yeah, it really does. And it's so fascinating to me. Mm. And watching all these like new versions of different styles. Like, Khabib, in my opinion, is a new version of the ground and pound style. I watch his ground and pound. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, he's such a... Like, when he fought Michael Johnson, there's no Justin Gaethje fight there, son. This is a mauling. 100%. This is a goddamn mauling. You're getting mauled by some crazy alien from another planet.
I like the way he traps the hands. And I had one on Brad as well a little bit, but I think he recognized it and he tried to go away. This is when I had his back for a brief moment in that fight, probably about a good 30 seconds, and I trapped his hand. I learned that from BJJ Scout. It was on the Ben Askren video, but Brad wouldn't let me have his right hand. But I got it though, because I got these fucking monkey fingers. Like, I can grip, I can grip really well. So I hold it, and I peppered him a little bit, and then that's when I kind of got to the fence, and something happened. Got a Kimura, but I pick from everyone. Khabib, there's a way he traps the hands. We call it the Khabib. Even when I get to my training partner, I start talking like you would never get this. I want this title shot. You know, I just kind of like mimic guys like that just because they're good at what they do.
Yeah.
And if I can get it and make it work for me like Bruce Lee, make it my own.
I'm really intrigued. I mean, I was really bummed out that Max Holloway had to pull out of that fight.
Shit.
That
I'm glad Michael Bisping called him out on that, though, man, because I think most other people would have just kind of like, oh, well, good luck. But he called him out on TV like, bro, you look like you just woke up. And you can tell.
Yeah, he recognized something.
I watched the interview, because I heard about it before I watched the interview, and I was like, oh, obviously. I didn't look at him. He's just like, you know, I feel great, blah, blah, blah.
Something's
blah.
Wrong.
Yeah, facts. Yeah. And he would have fought. He would have rehydrated and fought, maybe not to the best of his ability, but...
Well, he might have got knocked out. I mean, he might have got hit with a punch and got knocked out.
Ortega's no joke.
No joke.
You know? And you don't want to come against a guy, up against a guy like that and be slack. He should go to lightweight.
Well,
I think
Ortega's fascinating to me because the way he locks up submissions is so next level.
Long range. I like his
chokes. Not just that. The technique is so sharp, man. Mm. When he dives on shit. When he got Cub in that... He got him in a Doris at the end of the first round. I was like, what the fuck, man? Yeah. That is tight. Like, but there was something about the finality to it. There was like, this is not a question of whether or not he's going to finish it. Well, it was not that. It was the solidity of the technique. It was like when he locked it in, there was no doubt this fight was
like
over.
Knew,
and
like
then the bell rang.
Yeah.
And then I was like, whoa.
Some guys have
this
that.
This wasn't slippery.
Yeah.
This wasn't like maybe he's going to get out. You know how a guy gets a guillotine? He's like, oh, it looks like he's getting out. He's going to get out. This was death.
Okay.
And then he got him with a guillotine. He jumped on his guard. He jumped and got him in a guillotine.
Looks beautiful. That kind of stuff. Like Ortega, I like the way he looks. I look at guys like that because similar body types. And lately, I've been catching that. You see, in the fifth round, give me another maybe 7 seconds. I would have squeezed that. But it rang on as well on the belt. But every time someone goes for certain things, I can snatch the neck. But thing is, I don't have that the way Ortega has where he knows, like, okay, it's done. Like, for me, I'm like... I think it's tight. Let me try.
Well, you know how it is, right? If like if you tried to throw a jab hook with one hand and then throw it with the other hand, it just doesn't feel right with the other hand.
Yeah.
I'm
bistantral.
I bet you are. I go both ways. But you know some people, like from from my own personal experience, my left hand, I know how to do it with my left side, but my right side, it feels like awkward.
Yeah.
Well, there's a squeeze that you develop. Certain guys just get like this Marcelo Garcia style squeeze. Yeah.
That's what
he has. Ortega's got it.
I want that. That's the thing.
You can get it.
No, I've got I can catch the neck, but the thing is, when I catch it, I'm not dead set sure. Like, okay, it's over now. Like, I know if you don't tap, you're going to sleep.
But
I
if you just tapped a certain amount of black belts with that, you would have that feeling.
Yeah,
right?
He does. Yeah,
yeah, he's a beast, man. He's a beast. Mm. He's so fucking explosive on the ground. He throws up triangles and arm
bars. I like his style. I like his creativity as well.
Yeah,
he thinks outside the box.
Well, knocking out Frankie was giant, and hitting him with an uppercut like that.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
Out of nowhere.
It's just, Frankie can take it, too.
I saw Frankie fighting Atlantic City after that, just like, a few weeks after.
Yeah, like 4 weeks after, I think it was. He fought Cub Swanson. That's a dangerous fight to take after getting knocked out by Ortega.
Fuck.
What do you think about that, about guys doing that, like getting stopped?
I agree. Nah, same. Take time off. After that knockout in Brazil, I took about... I fought again in July.
Were you totally unconscious in that fight?
Yeah. I remember. Okay, so I remember this is what happened. I woke up. I was like, oh, shit. Okay, let me try and get up. Fuck, my arms just felt like noodles. I was like, all right, whatever. And then this kid, this fucking little shithead, like a baby, came over and just like, I think he either yelled in my face or whatever. And I was like, whatever. And then, because it's Brazil, they go crazy. Like, holy shit, he knocked this guy out.
So where was the kid? Like near you by the cage, by the ring?
Like, he came in the ring, like, and then
the referee came in the ring.
Like the referee had to like, yo, everyone, get order again. There was chaos.
And this is while they were doing the count.
Yeah, and then I was trying to get up. And then like, nah. And I think it was just over after that. Then I had cool, good fight. Give him a fist pound, and then the kid again came over next to me and just laid on the ground, just like. And I thought to myself,
mock you?
Yeah, I was just stomp his face, but I was like, nah.
How old was the kid?
7. I don't give a fuck. Oh. If you can crawl, we can brawl. Shout out to Michael Blackson.
Shit, that's funny. If you can crawl, we can brawl. That is fucking hilarious.
And
style
then I remember like
ruthless.
It's a dick move at the time.
Well,
you know,
7.
Yeah,
it's probably
chimps.
His kid, right? Was that his kid?
I don't know. He could have got it either way. If your dad don't spank you, I'll spank you.
That's hilarious.
But then I remember like flashes as well, walking out with Eugene to the stadium. Then we walked outside. We just sat there and I was like, breathe. I was like, what happened? And he just told me what happened. I was like, all right, okay. And then I remember back in the hotel chilling. And then, I felt like, fuck, I'm okay. This is the worst case scenario. I'm okay. And that was my first only ever knockout loss, knock on wood. And I was just like, fine, that's
and
it.
Do you think you learned something in that fight about not giving in to your emotions? And
I just don't let people, like, people, you're the man. You ain't shit. Now I don't give a fuck. Like, I only give a fuck about those who I care about. Like, someone like Ash or Eugene, those my close people, if they say something about me that, you know, hurts me, then I'll give a fuck. But if it's someone like, oh, bro, you're the man, this, that, but you gotta blah, 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 or be more this, I'm like, cool, I just smile and wave, because I don't give a fuck what they think. They're no one to me, you know, understand?
Yeah.
So, yeah, after that fight, I shouldn't have given into people's opinions of myself. I should have stayed true to me and just fucked him up in the second round. I would have knocked him out if I just didn't, literally, just right hands. Why am I only throwing right hands?
So you think that's like a critical lesson in your career?
Facts. I'm glad it happened. Like, in the moment, you know, hindsight, it's like, oh, fuck. Sucks, and I hate losing. I fucking hate losing. One thing, I went 40-0 before I had my first loss, and that was to Simon Marcus, Bati boy Simon Marcus. Like, and I beat him in that fight as well. But another judge, like, all three rounds.
He's a beast.
I beat him all three rounds, and then extra round.
That's a big fight to win. Right?
Extra round. They made it an extra round, and that extra round I still beat him. But then they gave it to him because he was a superstar at the time, and I realized, oh shit, I lost. Okay. I lived my life, and that was it. But I took winning for granted for so long in kickboxing because I was always expecting to win. And after that, after a fight, like, okay, what's next? Cool. I watched the fight maybe twice, maybe even once. Sometimes I only watch the fight, and then that's it. What's next? But this weekend, ever since I got to the UFC, or just before, every single fight, after I win, because my brain tries to go to that place where it's like, okay, what's next? But I'm like, wait, stop. Nigga, you just main evented in Vegas, your first fight, smoke this dude all five rounds, and you're on top of the world right now. Take this in. Mm. That's why I'll sit down, look at the T-Mobile Arena, and just like, I might have been a little iry as well, just by myself in my room. And then just get, like, you get objective. And I sit down, yeah. I just like, let it sink in, like, yo, you're out here, you're doing the damn thing, and really embrace it.
Yeah.
And eventually, when I go back home and I let things settle down and I move back into the flow of things, I'll start to get over it. But one thing I forget, smell the roses. Just stop sometimes and smell the roses. And it's not cocky. It's not. It's just appreciating what you've done, because you've put a lot of work into this, you know?
Yeah. That's a good attitude, man. I mean, I think what you're doing in terms of your ability to reflect on yourself and to be real objective about your abilities and where you want to go.
I learned that from your podcast. The one thing you said when I was, because I don't have any big brothers. So I don't really have anyone sunning me apart from Eugene, and like, but sometimes when I first started listening, you tell, it's like, don't be a bitch. You had this like big rant one time. If you want to do this and do that, follow your dreams, and like, you know, don't
conquer
be a,
your inner bitch.
Yeah, conquer your inner bitch. Yeah.
Everybody has an inner bitch.
I know. Tell me about it.
There's no way around it. If you're a human,
I'm a bitch in the streets, bro.
You got a little voice in there.
And I'm like, yeah, like it. Part of that was part of the fuel that helped me amongst a lot of other things. I take inspiration from everything to help me like get out of that. I remember the day, September 4th, 2013, I was just like, yep, I'm out. And I never looked back. I never worked a day in my life again.
Beautiful.
Never again. I couldn't do it. Oh,
there's one time, man. One time. You don't have to anymore. You're working, but you're working at something you have a passion towards. You're still working.
It doesn't feel like work. It doesn't feel like work. That's what I mean. Like, I don't care. If you work in the office, that's your thing. And if you don't feel like you're working and you have a passion for what you're doing, just do that.
Right.
But then, like I said, some guys who are fighting and they just do it because it gets, like Brendan Schaub, he was doing it because he's great at it.
Right.
Pays the bills. But now look at him, comedian, podcast.
He recognized it though. He's a wise guy in that. Yeah. He recognized there was this thing that he just – you go back to like his fight with Crow Cop or some of his earlier fights. He had a different attitude about fighting, and then he realized he didn't have it anymore. Mm. But he was still getting paid well, so he didn't know how to jump out.
Exactly. That's what I mean. So if you're not enjoying – it doesn't matter what it is. Just opt out. And he did. You helped him though. Yo, I listened to that. I was cringing the whole time. You had to. Yeah, that's what –
look, I love that guy. He's like a brother to me.
I tell my homies all the time.
He wasn't all there.
Yeah.
In terms of like he wasn't all in.
Facts.
Yeah.
I tell my homies all the time because a lot of people like they don't know how to handle like not the new me but the new lifestyle around me.
Yeah.
It's weird. People get – they get like – they become like groupies in a way.
What's spooky?
I'm like,
it's spooky because you broke through the membrane into the neighboring dimension. You know, like, oh shit,
like celebrity.
Stylebender's on TV.
He's still winning on TV.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, of course.
But to people that know you and then all of a sudden see you on TV, that's a mind fuck, man.
But
I remember seeing my first friends get on TV when I was a comedian.
Yo.
And watch them on TV going, whoa, a kid weirded me out.
Yeah,
I know
that
guy and I see him on TV.
Facts. Now, but for me, so the ones that are around me now, they're the ones that can check me. Like, if I fuck up.
They can handle it.
And they can check me. Like, if I fuck up, like, because I'm not perfect. I mean, everyone fucks up.
There's no such thing.
Yeah. So
it's
like, if I do something and I'm like, I'm in the wrong, they'll tell me, like, hey, you need to pull your head in. You know what I mean? So you need people like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad I have people like that now.
Well, having people like that and also having people like Dan Hooker in your camp, having people like all the other training partners that you were talking about, having great coaches. All those things have to be together. It's like you have to have people that are honest, that are assessing you. You have to have a good trainer who's looking at you, who knows you. It's like, you're a little off today, you're a little slow today, or today we're going to ramp it up. I think you're hitting the next level. We're going to add in some more different things.
Yeah.
Having someone who's
being
like,
able to adjust and adapt
everything,
to each. Everyone's different individually, even with fighting the style. So that's one thing I love about our staff at City Kickboxing is because they can look at someone and be like, okay, cool, he needs to do this. He needs to work on this better. It's beautiful. I honestly, like 20, 30 years from now, I keep telling my teammates that like, they're going to talk about us the way we talk about them, but
like
we don't
Majiro
realize it.
Majiro Gym, like when people talk about Ernesto Hu's gym.
100%.
Yeah.
Majiro. I've met him, Manat, Andre Manat as well in China. He's a kickboxing legend as well. But yeah, one day I'll go out there and get some work done, probably at
For
the end
sure.
of the year.
Yeah, man. I mean, mix it up.
Yeah.
Travel around.
I love New Zealand, don't get me wrong. When I see the Sky Tower, when I hit Auckland, I get excited like a little dog when it sees the park, you know what I mean? I love being home, but it's good to get out there, get some work, and without ego, because one thing I realize now is if I go to a different gym, it'll be different now because guys are, ooh, is that guy?
Right.
Sparring.
He might
you know?
Try to hurt you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, bro, we can play. We can play, well, but I don't get paid for that. That's
you're
the thing.
Also, you're also in one of the most beautiful countries that's ever existed. There's something about New Zealand, man. I've never been personally, but there's a reason why they filmed The Hobbit there. Because like you look at some of that shit, and it looks magical.
Yeah, it
like,
is.
Woo.
It feels good to be like I just love the vibe. It's a vibe in New Zealand I like.
What is like, the vibe like?
It's chill. Everyone's real loose, like not like loose like Australia. You can get loose like that, but it's relaxed.
What's the difference between loose like Australia and loose like New Zealand?
Well, Australia's a loose cunts.
What's like the difference? There,
like,
what's the difference?
Bam Bam drinks out of a shoe.
Oh, yeah,
don't give a fuck. Aussies, like the attitude, and they're cool as well. It can be chill, but you can get some real loose cunts there. Like in New Zealand, like in anywhere, like in America.
Right.
You know, but generically speaking, like it's just, yeah, Australians are... Depends where you go. Melbourne's my city. That's my favorite city in Australia. Melbourne, Perth, and then Adelaide. Those are my favorite cities in that order. But, yeah, I don't know. I'll probably hit a few other spots as well, see what the vibe is
like. Just keep moving around.
Yeah.
Now, what about American gyms? How many different American gyms have you trained at besides Black Zillions?
Black Zillions. Let me think. I've trained with a few fighters, but maybe I've trained with... Let me think. Who else? I think that's the only gym. I didn't go to ATT. In LA, did I train? Most of the times I'm here. When I'm on holiday, I don't train. I holiday out. I fully,
right.
Yeah,
good
I chill.
For you.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You got
fight,
a good idea about balance, man.
Yeah, I try. Know? Once in a while, you go too much this side, you have to find it, okay, go to the other side. And it never stays right in the middle for that for a long period of time. It's just like, okay, you lean this way, go this way, all right, and find the balance. So it's just feeling and being honest with yourself. Objectivity, I say, always check yourself. ACY, always check yourself, no matter what, how you're feeling. And so, like, if something gets me, like maybe if I see something that makes me feel a way, like I get jealous, I'm like, why do I feel that way? Why am I hating? You know, like it has nothing to do with me.
Right,
and I find
right.
out where it comes from. And then eventually, it's like you identify the monster and then you slaughter it, you kill it.
Good for you, man.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I learn. I'm coming up. I'm learning.
You're a bad motherfucker. Listen, man.
My
gonna wrap this up. Thank you, brother.
It.
I'm glad we got a chance to do
yeah,
this.
It's
last
the first
minute,
one.
Threw it in.
Easy,
yeah. The first one. That's
yeah.
right. It's the first one. We're going to do this some more.
I get more comfortable the way these go on.
Dude, you were great, man. It was fun. It was
I appreciate
fun.
It. Thank you.
Stylebender on Twitter. Stylebender on Instagram.
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Catch me. Slide in my DMs.
Everywhere. Slide in the DMs.
Oh, man. That was fun. I needed that, so I was like,